let's start the show.
It's December 22nd, 2011. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Welcome to a special edition of This Is Only a Test. It's special because Will's not here.
Yay.
I can't believe I almost messed that up.
Well, he's kind
of. Totally whiffed it.
I did not whiff it.
No, you didn't. There was a moment there.
A moment where I forgot
there was
what year it was.
A brief second, but I saw you get past it.
And then you gave me a look, and then I couldn't control myself.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show. This is our podcast, last podcast of the year, possibly.
We'll do it next week, right?
I don't know. We might do one next week.
The jury is very much out.
Yeah, you're already on vacation, Will. But let's introduce everyone in the room. I'm Norm from Tested.com, and Will is with us remotely. If you're watching the stream right now, you might be able to see him on my laptop. He's kind of
Oh my God, I can't get out of here. Let me out.
He's kind of wearing a t-shirt with a smoking bird on it. I think it's a Gamago t-shirt. San Francisco t-shirt.
Indeed.
You guys can't see. I'm going to have to figure out some way.
I'm fine.
We know what Will looks like. We're good.
Gary's reached his limit, I think.
Yeah.
We also have Wesley Fenlon in the room.
Hey, guys.
Letting him on the podcast this week.
Wearing, number one contributor to Tested.
Robot t-shirt. Some type of robot t-shirt.
I love robots.
Yeah, it's all right. It's not so great.
All right. Come on. It's an awesome robot. There's a city and everything. Lights.
Yeah. It's very colorful.
It's great.
It's like someone barfed a rainbow on your shirt. Robot standing in front of it. Stenciled. And Gary's on the podcast.
As always.
Yeah. You're wearing a nice cardigan.
Thank you.
Yeah. And very tired. You're on a podcast with me earlier today. So
we did the Comic Vine podcast earlier today together.
What the hell?
Yeah. And
you guys are cheating on our podcast with each other?
Norm does the Comic Vine podcast all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, but not with you. I don't know how I feel about that. I was asked to sit in
and I was happy to help out.
Okay. Fair enough.
It was interesting. I learned a lot about what's going on in comics right now. It's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So while I've been gone, pretty much it seems like all that happens in the office is that everybody goes out and gets loaded at lunch, and then Ethan and Dan go hat shopping.
Wait, no one gets loaded at lunch? What are you talking about?
I've just seen Patrick posting pictures of margaritas every day.
Wow.
I brought in a bunch of beer for those guys as well today as well. Gingerbread beer.
You brought beer for those guys, and then you bought us something.
Well, no, hold on. No, the beer is for you as well. The beer is for everybody. Okay. That's why there's a lot of it. It's for everyone to share.
People are quite excited about it.
And I did also bring in the funnel cake maker.
Mm.
I'm very excited. Norm, though, you've said you have no interest in funnel cake. I presume you won't be a part of that segment.
No, I'll participate in making the funnel cake, but I just won't consume it.
I'll eat your funnel cake for you, Norm.
How can you not like funnel cake? It's so great. It looks like if you took Cryptosporidium or something and like blew it up to like a 1 millionth the size, then that's what a funnel cake would look like. Just a massive squirming bacteria or a tapeworm or something.
It's just an awesome excuse.
Lovely powdered sugar on top.
Yeah, it's just an awesome excuse to eat powdered sugar.
Yes, I'll have a large deep fried tapeworm with powdered sugar, please.
But they always give you too much.
All a funnel cake is like a nonlinear churro.
Basically. The funnel cakes they give you at Disneyland and Universal Studios are ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a mountain of funnel cake, and then they throw ice cream and cream and jelly and
sugar
jam.
Plus
and
fat.
Oh, yeah,
so
the best.
Deep frying
the Paula
sugar
Deen,
plus fat.
Someone just tweeted some Paula Deen crazy Christmas recipes, including deep fried stuffing sticks, which sounded pretty amazing. I might have to make some of this stuff this year.
So what was involved in this kit? Like, what's special about funnel cake that you need a kit to
make? There's nothing.
It?
I mean, it's a ripper. It's another one of these I've seen on TV things. I saw it at Bed Bath & Beyond, and I'm like, I'll get it. Why not? $15.
Bed Bath & Beyond, it's kind of like seen on TV store in a Trojan horse.
It's basically funnel cake mix, which is just nothing but like, you know, a generic flour combo of some kind. And it also comes with apple cinnamon flavored flour.
Okay. It comes with
the
ingredients.
You basically pour the flour and the water into like a cheap plastic funnel like receptacle that comes in the box, and you pour out the funnel cake into some presumably a deep fat fryer, which you're going to have to provide.
I still have the turkey fryer.
Right. Okay.
That could work.
And then you throw some powder, and there's a powdered sugar shaker. You provide your own powdered sugar, and you're off to the races.
All right. Powdered sugar is the best part.
I just don't know how you've achieved this station in life without with this anti-funnel cake
attitude. Yeah, I'm offended.
It's just all wrong.
Because if you buy it, it's so cheap at the fair.
Have you ever had like a donut fresh out of the oil, like a carnival
or
something?
Yeah,
that's great. Well, that's what a funnel cake is like that.
Just right. I have very poor portion
control. It costs you like $1. Eat it until you don't want any more and toss the rest away.
No, if I have something, I was taught to eat it all because, you know, there are starving children in China.
Oh, okay. So we're going back to your own childhood.
Yeah. So every grain of rice is picked by a farmer from the rice paddies. So if I don't eat every grain of rice in the bowl, some farmer's going to cry.
Wow, your parents really did a number on you.
You thought I was fucked up.
Waste not. So, Will, you're in Tennessee.
Yeah, but a funnel cake, you can see the guy making it. It takes him like 5 seconds. You don't have to feel too bad about throwing that away. It's like the easiest food to make.
But some kids, like some poor kid, can't afford the funnel cake, and you're just throwing away all this funnel cake.
Give it to some. You're at a carnival. Give it to some poor kid. There's plenty, bound to be plenty there.
That should just make you enjoy it more.
I'm solving all your problems
for you.
That means
you're better than them. You won the funnel cake. It's all yours.
No, so I think nevertheless you should do a funnel cake.
We would definitely.
I think the tested audience want to see you play around with boiling oil as much as possible.
Yeah, we've done that, but last time it was perfectly safe, and we actually disposed of that oil, the turkey fryer oil.
Did you do the storm sewer method?
No, they're still at disposal, meaning they're now in the original peanut oil containers.
I haven't actually read the instructions, but given that this isn't. That they can't assume that everyone's got a deep fat fryer at home. Yeah. That you probably can just like pour like an inch or two of oil into a pan and just make it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You could do a Dutch oven for that probably.
Yeah, but you probably need like a sieve type spatula kind of thing to get it out of there. They provide tongs. That's right. That comes in the kit as well. They thought of everything.
Convenient. And now if there was a churro kit, I could get behind that.
But a churro is just a funnel cake that's been straightened out. Just make them in a straight line.
It makes all the difference.
Just make a small funnel cake, Norm.
I don't know. Well, I guess.
Just make small, straight lines of funnel cake.
Sounds like something someone would eat in the South.
Bite-sized portions.
That was a pretty good segue, Chan.
Will's been living it up today. He was at the beef jerky outlet store
today.
Yeah,
so what type of fancy Southern foods have you enjoyed this past
week? Do you want me to look at my path and tell you where I've been recently?
Yeah.
It's absolutely fascinating.
And also remind us exactly when you went to sleep and
when
you woke up.
That's all it's good for.
That's the information I need.
Really?
I don't know why it makes that stuff public. I wish it didn't.
Well, you have to manually put in the sleep-wake stuff.
You do.
Well, I didn't realize it was spamming everybody until today, so apologies.
Well, you thought why that was just for your own private use?
A social network.
Yeah. I like to know when how much sleep I'm getting. It's important to track that stuff.
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, we'll talk about path.
Yeah. So, what type of foods have you been enjoying?
Let's see. We went to a pizza place that we used to go to a lot when we lived in Knoxville yesterday for lunch. That was pretty good.
So the place I'm interested in is the beef jerky outlet store, which sounds like where you go when you feel like the regular beef jerky store is too fancy. Like you want to go to the outlet version.
So the mistake that we realized was that there's actually a super beef jerky outlet store a little bit further down the street from just the beef jerky outlet.
So there are two outlets.
So is it all like slightly imperfect beef jerky? Because I'll eat almost anything, but I don't like the sound of that.
I didn't buy any. I looked at it and I was like, I'm just going to check in here. I'm not even going to go in. I don't want to know what the story is here because I was afraid of the imperfect beef jerky.
This is the lowest class thing I can think of. Not only did you not go to the regular beef jerky store, you went to the beef jerky outlet store, and then you just browsed. You didn't even buy anything.
Yeah, I was afraid. I was afraid of the imperfects. I didn't want that business.
Beef jerky that you buy at a gas station is the worst because you don't know how long it's been sitting there. And it's not like the vacuum-sealed beef jerky. It's just like they have it in the bins. How long?
But it has the silica gel.
Oh, silica gel.
Jerry Seinfeld, I think, had the best quote about beef jerky when he said the way in which beef jerky is made is you take a perfectly good piece of beef and you have a New York City cab driver sit on it for a month.
Oh, that's so racist.
Yeah.
Why is that racist?
New York City cab driver, man.
Yeah. I didn't specify any kind of ethnicity. Yeah, that's all your inference. Every time you do this, you just make yourself look more racist.
Are you staying with your parents in Tennessee?
I am. I'm at my parents' house. We just got here about 4 o'clock this afternoon, which is roughly 1 o'clock your time, I guess.
Didn't I see you were at a basketball game or something?
Yeah, we went to a basketball game the first night we got here. Let's see. I'll give you the whole rundown of the trip. Got on the plane in San Francisco.
You can move it along. Just give us the highlights.
Flew. They gave brought out cake. I had coffee on the plane. Pretty good.
Well, they serve coffee on the plane. This is getting more fascinating by the minute. What kind of coffee?
It was It was like a Colombian blend is when I asked. And then she told me to go fuck myself because I was an asshole.
Did you recline your seat?
I did. I don't recline the seat unless I'm sleeping. That's my
rule for
airplane.
Do you feel guilty about the person behind you when you recline your seat?
They're designed in a way so it doesn't offend the person as much now. If you're on a newer airplane.
It still offends me plenty.
Bullshit.
Well, yeah, I always get stuck behind the guy that doesn't give a fuck about what's happening to the person behind him.
I one time tracked it, and I had 13 flights in a row where the person in front of me reclined. And one time, the person was 3.5 feet tall when she stood up.
Yeah, and I look along the row, and I see that he's the only guy in the row in front of me with his seat back. I lose that lottery every time. Yeah.
That's the thing. If I don't know that person's reclined and all three in front of me are reclined, ignorance is bliss. Then I just think, oh, you know, these are
right,
shitty airplanes.
That's the baseline.
Right.
But
yeah. If everyone is up and only the guy in front of me is reclined,
that's worse.
Then I
agree.
Offended.
I usually just, if somebody reclines in front of me, I just work their kidneys with my knees.
Yeah,
flight.
just kick the back of the seat until they get the message.
Right. That's right. You flew first class.
I was in the front. Yeah, it was exciting.
Oh, so even if the guy reclined, it wouldn't have affected you that much.
Well, you'd be surprised, but it was U.S. Air, so even the first class recline encroached on the personal space. The guy in front of Gina reclined, and it was really, really hard to get in and out of the aisle because I don't know if you know this, but in the front, your drink has its own little tray. There's like the normal tray for your food and your laptop and stuff. And then there was another little like spin out tray that was just sized for a cocktail. It was really
so not,
nice.
Not a cup holder. Cause that's not classic.
That's how the 1% live.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a tray. And then there was another tray between us where we could put our Coke cans. And this is going to blow your mind, but instead of taking the cup out and putting ice in it and then pouring the Coke in and then handing you the cup and leaving the half a Coke for the next person, you got the can.
You know, the Oatmeal did a comic about that, and that is the saddest thing someone you can say on an airplane. It's, oh my God, it's amazing.
Yeah. You got extra 400 bucks or whatever. You,
wow.
Yeah. That's the most expensive half a can of Coke you ever bought.
Well, I used miles. I used miles for this. So it was miles. It was U.S. Air miles, and they were going to expire, so I cashed them
in.
No,
that's a good call.
Gone.
It's surprising, though. I think you're right. It's surprising sometimes just how little an upgrade first class is on a lot of airlines. It's really not that much better, and you do pay a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't kick me in the balls when I got on the plane, but every single person that walked past us gave me the stink eye because they were like, oh, look, it's some asshole in a t-shirt and jeans up there. It's, you know, if it's old people, they just assume.
They probably think you're like some young, hip internet billionaire or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
young
if you go
bearded.
Past first class, it's mostly the business guys, right? The business class. And
it would be a fun game to play. If I didn't know Will, but I saw him looking as he does. Sitting down in the first class cabin of a plane, I would be playing a game in my mind like, what the fuck does he do for a living?
Yeah.
Looking like he does and flying first class.
Well, hold on. What do you mean looking like he does?
Well,
what the fuck does that mean?
You know, you usually dress pretty casually.
I wear nice jeans.
And you're bearded.
Ironic t-shirt.
You don't look like a one percenter, is
well,
what I'm
thank
saying.
You.
That's right. It was meant as a compliment.
Yeah, I could tell. Let's see. So other stuff on the front. We got to go to the front bathroom, which I haven't gotten to do since they instituted that rule. That was really exciting.
Wait, is that a euphemism for something?
No, the front bathroom, they don't let you go to.
Is that like some really sick version of the Mile High Club? What is that?
No. There's a bathroom up by the
cockpit. Oh, literally the bathroom in the front. Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's the bathroom by the cockpit. And you can't go up there if you're not in first class. So I got to go up there. Only 16 people.
It is true.
Really?
Remember Larry David got into that whole thing where he couldn't get into he was in first class and they wouldn't let him into the economy bathroom.
Would they really would they really stop you if you were like in the first row of the economy section? And
try it sometime.
Yeah, I watched
the guy. They are on you like a fucking hawk.
But are there curtains like separating first class?
Yes.
And, no.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they shut the little curtain.
Yeah, and they give you that little look before they close the curtain as well.
Oh, man. Like the party's up here. You don't know what we're doing. It's a crazy orgy up in first class, and you guys are all crammed with like crappy seats in your TV movie.
Yeah, and you can hear like the dope beats and all the kind of silhouettes of people dancing and stuff and partying around on the other side of the curtain,
especially on like
your
on
nose
Virgin,
pressed up against
the
glass,
because you know it's a party with the lights.
I love Virgin America because the whole plane is like a nightclub.
Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah. And that's actually a big first class upgrade for not a lot of money. You can get like $50, you get like a nice first class upgrade, and then you got full body massage rollers in your chair. It's fantastic.
Hmm.
Oh wow, really? They have the ass grinding chair?
I'm starting to seriously regret this notion of driving to Vegas with you guys there and back. I felt like I should have got a flight back.
You're flying back.
No, that was the plan, but I went on. Most of the flights were already gone.
Oh,
somebody
so I may be stuck both ways, which I'm not. I'm gonna yeah.
It's gonna be unpleasant for everyone.
I'm just gonna have to take a couple of pills.
You're not gonna hold any of those farts.
No.
Oh gonna, God, yeah. No.
And I'll have,
in the
and I'll have been eating Vegas food for a week.
The buffet,
Vegas buffet.
Let's not do the buffet the night before.
All you can eat shrimp.
Oh.
This sounds
the night
like
before.
A drive that might start in Vegas but never get back to San Francisco.
No, oh, no van farting.
We had to rent
guys.
An extra van just for the ride back.
That's right.
Two vans. Hey,
like so rent a trailer or something.
Yeah, they're playing like this week. Oh, I want to ask, did you visit the tree farm?
Well, the tree farm's in my backyard.
so it's backyard. Right there. You're like 20 feet away from that right now.
It haunts me. It haunts me.
Have the lambs stopped screaming?
After this, I'll fire up Skype on the webcam. Oh, it's pitch black, so I won't. But maybe I'll do a jar time or something before I leave from the tree farm.
I think the listeners would love to see the tree farm.
Well, the trees are all like 40 feet tall now because I'm old, and you know they were to be harvested when I was 18 or 19. So
and they never were.
Why haven't they been harvested
were.
Then?
We sold some of them at $7.50 a piece, $7.50. It was well good investment.
Wait, this part is always it's beyond. So, it's not funny anymore. It just depresses me. I think we should just move on.
Yeah. Right,
so we recorded the podcast early last week on Wednesday, and after we recorded the podcast, some news broke out. Big news. The AT&T T-Mobile deal is finally kaput.
Yes.
So it seemed like it was going bad.
It
for
was.
A while.
And FCC had put the kibosh on it.
Well, they had
it.
Kind of shelved it a little bit already, right? And now it's officially dead.
And analysts were saying, you know, how could AT&T salvage this? Because there's a huge fee they had to pay T-Mobile if they couldn't go through with it. And then finally they caved. They threw in the towel, issued a press release. We're not going to do it anymore. And so what is the aftermath? And what does T-Mobile get out of this?
$4 billion.
That's a lot.
So they basically get $4 billion for doing nothing.
Yeah.
I saw there was
only
and their stock prices went up.
Because
you know, after the rumors.
Yeah. Wow. Good. So good for everyone at T-Mobile. Not so good for anyone else. Well, I mean, actually good for everyone but AT&T.
Now, they get more than just money, right, Wes?
Right. They're getting like a 7-year roaming agreement with AT&T, I think. Several like multi-year roaming agreement. And they're getting a big chunk of spectrum that they can use for, you know, whatever they want, more 3G or 4G data probably. So it was just a huge total win for them. And I don't know if AT&T really had plans for that spectrum, but I'm sure that they would prefer to have it than to give it away.
Spectrum space isn't cheap.
So yeah. Is that why it was only $3 billion cash instead of $4 billion? Because the spectrum and other stuff was part of the deal?
Yeah, I think that's exactly why it is. So people on T-Mobile, while they still aren't able to buy the iPhone, they can expect in over the next couple of years probably better service. And people on AT&T, like us, I guess sucks
not
for
me.
Us. Yeah. Oh, well, not you. Now, I think I'm going to stick with AT&T.
All right.
And I'm going to segue to something that is not on our show notes, but LTE is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And you know LTE is amazing, Gary, because you've used the 4G MiFi.
I got the MiFi, and yeah, I'm a devotee.
It's fast.
Yeah.
And we used the Galaxy Nexus last week. We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
And LTE on Verizon is super fast.
It's fantastic.
But you're going to use it recklessly. You kind of like when you're downloading or when you're surfing the net like you do and your head is, you know, you're in the mindset that it's your desktop and you're not on your mobile device. You're going to browse the web and download stuff and use up all your bandwidth. You want to be on an unlimited plan.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be on an unlimited plan on Verizon.
Right.
Unless you're grandfathered into it. Same with AT&T.
Right.
I'm going to stick with AT&T until we get LTE.
Yeah.
And if they let me grandfather in...
They won't let you grandfather in your unlimited plan if you also want to use it as a hotspot.
Well, no, as a hotspot, you got to pay the extra $20 a month, right?
Right. And that's what we're talking about, right? Is using it on your laptop.
So is the 4G all 5 gigabytes per month at the high end?
The 4G that I have is I have the base plan, which is 5 gigabytes for $50 a month. There's also 10 gigabytes for $80 a month.
Okay.
And I don't use anything like 5 gigs. And I do try to be mindful of it. Anytime that I have a data cap, even the one I have at home, I have a 250 gigabyte monthly data cap on my Comcast internet at home. And even though I, you know, never come anything like close to that, I still check in a couple of times a week just to make sure that I didn't, you know, accidentally download a mega movie trailer or something that freaked it out.
But you don't like skirting close to the edge.
And you do get warnings. Verizon send me text warnings when I'm getting like 75, 90, and 100% of my cap. They'll tell me. So you can't go over without knowing. You could run out halfway through the month because you've been using it too much and realize that you're kind of screwed. That hasn't happened to me yet.
Yeah, I cannot wait. I mean, there were polls and surveys of people who own the iPhone, who bought the iPhone 4S, and
yeah.
What's the number one thing that people want from the iPhone? It's 4G.
Yeah.
And number two thing they want is increased battery life, and those things are
They're not compatible. And once you experience 4G, real 4G LTE, like I've got the little thing. I keep it in my car now, and I just turn it on, leave it in the center console, and it creates a cloud. And I've got Wi-Fi in my car. It's fantastic.
It makes a difference.
And it's incredibly, incredibly fast. It's very impressive. I'm very confident. I'd be amazed if the next iPhone is not an LTE phone.
I really hope the chips that Qualcomm is working on that are supposed to come out next year totally deliver on their promise of good battery life, LTE and everything.
Because that's the problem. Apple considers battery life to be pretty sacrosanct, which is why they are usually kind of like a half generation behind in terms of the latest radios. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, we'll see it here. I don't think they can go another year not having 4G. You know, it would start to look bad. So well, the next one, I think we can expect it.
I mean, they've done this before, though. When they did the 3G switch, battery life was bad, and they took a lot of hits for that. They're not going to do that again. But what we're seeing out of CES bookings, at least, is that a lot of people are promising substantially lower power chipsets for next generation phones. So I would assume that stuff will be ready in time for next iPhone.
Is the idea that even though the LTE radio continues to be a big battery hog, you can offset it by making the rest of the phone more efficient?
Well, and also they can improve on the LTE radios as well.
Right.
It's mostly the LTE radios that's going to improve. And I want the ability to turn off 4G when I don't want it. Like right now, I can't turn off 3G on the iPhone 4S.
Yeah.
Using 3G or no data at all. It wasn't like on the 4, we can do 3G Edge to extend your battery life. Or in some places, Edge reception was actually better. 2G was better than 3G, like in airports. Then that's not in the 4S, and I'm kind of bummed out.
I don't know if it's really been rolled out yet for real testing, but I noticed that AT&T recently in its TV commercials has started talking about how it's now offering true 4G LTE phones.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested to know how they're – because before they had 4G before, but it was kind of like quasi 4G. As we've said before, not all 4G is real 4G. LTE is the only true 4G. And now the AT&T is claiming to have it on some of their phones and saying 10 times faster than 3G, blah, blah, blah. Notice they're not making any comparisons with Verizon or anything else. I'd be interested to see some LTE, you know, performance comparisons.
Well, there has been some LTE performance comparisons. Just came out today.
Oh, right.
Westward news story about this morning, and the results are surprising.
Okay.
AT&T was faster.
Ah.
Not a lot faster, but significantly faster.
So what were the data speeds?
It was like 13 kbps for AT&T and like 13,000 kbps for AT&T and about 10,000 for Verizon.
Right. So AT&T is about 25-30% faster. And now I wonder if it's going to wind up being the same story as it kind of is right now with the current generation 3G, where AT&T, like with the new iPhone, they are able to boast faster speeds, but Verizon still has the more reliable coverage overall. Like, I can't imagine AT&T's LTE network right now has that much coverage.
No. Do you have a lot of people using it?
It's really small.
No, there's
right now.
Six cities or something with AT&T LTE. Yeah.
Right, right.
And not a lot of people actually on those networks.
Yeah, they just bumped up to about 15, I think, as of like November or the end of November. So it's still really small.
The thing that I found really disappointing the other day was discovering that, you know, so there's AT&T. We think about different kinds of 4G, right? And we think of LTE as the main kind of 4G. But then AT&T's LTE is not the same as Verizon's LTE. So they're not, even though they're rolling out all these LTE networks, they don't overlap. That we're not creating one mega cloud of LTE. Like they don't, you couldn't roam from one to the other.
Well, it's the same with 3G. I mean, Verizon 3G is CDMA, and AT&T is HSP.
I know. You just think it's like at some point they would get their shit together. It's supposed to be called long-term evolution, and that seems like a long-term myopia.
But the LTE thing, it uses the same type of radio protocols. Just Verizon and AT&T are using different frequency spectrums, right? That was my understanding of how it works.
Right. So, but the end result is the same, is that I can't hop from one LTE network to another if I was willing to pay money to do that.
They'd probably charge out the ass if you tried to do that.
Right. But no, I mean, like, for example, you know, Sprint has that arrangement with Verizon, right, where they can piggyback on their network.
Well, T-Mobile has that with AT&T.
Right. For all the fucking good that's going to do.
Right.
Anyway, I can't get a signal on my T-Mobile phone. Oh, I just swap over to AT&T. Oh, no, wait, that's fucked as well. Yeah.
So you want to be on the Sprint
Verizon team.
I used to be bitter. Well, now I'm just reformed.
Smug is what you've transitioned from bitter to smug.
Smug.
I like bitter with a better.
Have a very smug Christmas, everybody. Such an attractive quality smugness I've always found.
It's
Nothing a woman like finds more attractive than a really smug guy.
It's like confidence plus.
It is. It is. Yeah. It's like uber confidence.
Yeah.
Well, you got to be careful. You can go too far with the
confidence. It's like, I'm so confident, I can't even behave myself.
But it's not.
I can't even do it in a seemly manner. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's confident, smug, asshole.
There's no good version of smug.
No. No. Smarminess. So speaking of phones with LTE that we got hands-on with, the Galaxy Nexus we mentioned, that also came into the office. We didn't actually get one, but we did get hands-on time with one. And we were
looking to
get one. Yeah, it's really big. So, Gary, you're the only one who actually hasn't held one yet.
I haven't held it, no. I wasn't in the office the day that you had it.
It is a massive phone.
I heard it's big. I mean, is it up there like in the very top percentile of the oversized phones?
Yeah.
Okay.
In terms of just surface area. It doesn't feel really thick, though, so it actually feels pretty good.
And is that a positive or a negative? How are we feeling about these jumbo phones these days?
I think that phone, if you think of it as a two-handed phone, at least with my hands, then it's really easy to use.
In terms of screen size, like it's getting close to being as large as the Dell Streak
yeah.
which was supposed to be
kind of a hybrid.
But that was a hybrid, wannabe tablet, and also that was kind of thick.
Right.
This is
it a really, really big phone or a really small tablet? You can't. Right. You're kind of in the uncanny valley.
4.65
inches.
No.
It's not. It's not a small tablet. It's a big phone.
And it does have the 1280x720 resolution, with a Super AMOLED screen. And while the screen does look great, after some more use, the whites on that screen don't look so good in dark.
Are they kind of yellow?
Yeah. The Pentile stuff does come out in low light.
You know what's really fun about having Will Skyped in like this and being able to hear him in my headphones?
Yeah.
Is I'm kind of imagining that I'm in like a movie where I hit my head and I woke up and now I've got like Will's voice is like another personality that lives in my head.
Wait, yeah. This is just like that Reese Witherspoon movie where she dies and only like Owen Wilson can hear her or something.
I didn't see that movie.
It wasn't Owen Wilson. It was Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd. You're Reese Witherspoon, Will. You're both from the South.
You're like a ghostly voice in my head that's telling me what to do.
I'm pretty sure I met her in a bar one night when I was in college.
You just made that up.
But anyway, Galaxy Nexus, the screen. So we did a quick look video, and at the end of the video, we did this test where I tried to hit the home button on the bottom of the screen in one position, and then at the same time try to pull the navigation bar from the top of the screen.
Right.
I couldn't do that.
Say two-handed, like, so the idea of like holding the phone in one hand and just using your thumb, moving that around the screen.
Like if
the
you hold the iPhone in one hand, I can hit
any reasonably sized phone.
Yeah, I can hit the home button.
Yeah.
And I
you have full range of motion from the bottom to all the extremities.
Drag down notification bar, no problem. Right. It's a 3.5 inch.
On the Galaxy Nexus, that's a two-handed operation.
For me, it is. Some people with bigger hands can hit every part of the screen with one hand.
Right.
I couldn't.
Right.
But everything on the hardware side looked really good.
You also did some LTE tests, right? Do you remember how fast that came down?
Incredibly fast.
Because I think it was significantly faster than the average speed that the test between AT&T and Verizon. I think yours were way better than the national average.
Yeah, so we did a whole like speedtest.net app thing where we just ran the numbers. It was 10 megabits down. And 11 megabits up, just outside our office.
Okay, well, that's about in range with this test then.
And so that was pretty fast. I mean, 11 megabits up. You're basically uploading like 1.5 megs a second.
Yeah, I mean, you're not really going to need that. There's a reason why you get less up than down.
Right.
Great for streaming from your phone, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're like Justin TV or SocialCam or something, yeah.
And Flash is still built in. Amazon, you can actually open the Android web browser, go to like Amazon Prime Video Streaming and watch HD video right from the web browser, maximize it full screen. Ice Cream Sandwich, also new. So all virtual buttons now. There is some funny business because the options button. So on traditional Android phones before Ice Cream Sandwich, there are three buttons. There's back, home, and then an options button. It's context sensitive. So when you're an app, it's the menus, right? The menu button is now no longer dedicated. No longer has a dedicated spot in the bottom of the screen. It's three dots hidden somewhere on the app, and you have to kind of recognize that means menu.
So what happens with the apps that aren't Ice Cream Sandwich aware?
I'm not sure. I think that pops
up.
Yeah, I meant to check that somewhere, and I forgot
when we were doing the
How did the phone feel in the hand build quality-wise? Did it feel good or plasticky or what?
It was somewhere between the Nokia, the Lumia 800 and like the Galaxy S2, I would say. So yeah. Worse than iPhone, worse than the Lumia, better than the Galaxy S2.
Okay. I mean, it's still a Samsung phone. I think it's probably one of their better phones. Samsung phones have like the pop-out backs. So if you once you pop out the back panel to get to the battery, that back panel always feels kind of plasticky. So this had that as well.
Do you were you impressed by the camera? Because I know they made a lot of hay out of that zero lag shutter speed.
I was impressed initially by how quickly you tap the camera. So there really is no shutter delay at all. As fast as you can tap
which
the screen.
Which is great. You know, we all know how frustrating. When you're trying to take a picture and the shutter is like calibrating whatever it is it's doing, yeah. Like seconds can feel like hours.
But who? No one's going to – I mean other than the first photo you're taking, you're not going to be taking 50 photos a minute, right?
If you're the kind of person that's doing that, you probably should get a real camera.
But the thing is you're taking photos. It doesn't focus that fast. So the focus is slower than the ability to take a picture.
So you get blurry pictures?
If you take too many photos at once, yeah. So I would rather have a slightly better camera, maybe a little bit shutter delay, but better sensor and faster focus. Otherwise, it's a really good 5-megapixel camera. If you take the time to compose your shots and do all your settings, you can get pictures just as good as the Galaxy S2.
And so, you know, clearly the flagship Android phone at this point, right?
Yep. And I don't know, any other thoughts about the phone, Will?
I like what they did with Ice Cream Sandwich. I like that the buttons are gone. I like where the Samsung puts the finger button, you know, where your index finger holds it when it's in your left hand. It felt really fast. The keyboard, I did see a little bit of keyboard stutter just in some really brief typing tests, but it was much less noticeable than every other Android phone I've used. It's okay. It's not the phone for me. I don't think I'd have to spend a lot more time with it, but we'll get on it before too long.
It's also kind of expensive phone.
It's a pretty expensive phone. I think I'm going to get Braga to bring one from Canada when he comes down, a GSM one, so that we can spend a little more time with it. Cause I think it's worth, spending more time with that.
We want to stock Ice Cream Sandwich phone in the office.
Yeah. I think another nice thing is it seems like the specs say it should do mirroring out, so that would make it a lot easier for us to do Android apps and stuff like that, which I think is important.
Right, so it has the fancy HDMI and USB in one connection.
MHD is what that's called.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to be at CES in less than a month now, I guess.
What? 3 weeks.
Yeah, very close at this point.
Yeah, two and a half weeks.
I'm very excited. Not so much about the driving there and back part.
Driving there, I think it's going to be fun.
Hey, do you have a DS?
I do not have a DS. Should I buy a DS just for the drive?
I'm going to bring mine.
I have two DSs. Somebody can borrow
mine. Yeah, we need to DS up on this trip. That's the only way we're going to survive it.
Okay.
I'll bring like Tetris and Mario Kart and some stuff that we can play. By the way, what does this say about the 3DS? That I have one and I'm like going to leave that at home and just bring the regular DS.
Why that seems about right.
Because I'm an idiot.
The battery would.
I'm not stupid enough to buy the Vita. At least give me that.
Well, it's not out yet in the US.
I won't be buying it when it is out.
Are you sure about that?
100% sure. You can hold me to that. I will eat the biggest rotten, stinky egg you can possibly imagine.
All right, Gary, you're not going to buy it ever, or get like a 6-month window.
Well, I mean, if they dropped it to 99% or whatever, it became like they put all my favorite games on it.
Okay.
In that case, but not in the foreseeable future would I even contemplate it. No.
All right. But it is out in Japan. It's sold fairly well. 300,000 units.
It did pretty good. Not quite as good as the 3DS, which people have been like dumping on for its sales for the past year or so.
I've been looking at the launch lineup for that console. It looks pretty solid. There's like 25 games.
Yeah, Pactor was tweeting about it today saying it's a pretty decent lineup. And John Davison from GameSpot has got one, and he's been tweeting about his experiences with it. It's in the wild now. It's a real thing.
If you want to import it, there's no big risk to importing it because it is unlocked.
Right, region free.
Games are region free.
Exactly. But you're just paying double the price.
Super expensive. And
there are some people
Uncharted is like the only game you can play.
Yeah, but there are obviously people with more money than patience, and they're willing to.
The 0.1%.
Yeah. Yeah, the real 1%.
Yeah. Hmm.
So it's like that's when you get the Lexus, and when you take the bow off and get inside, there's a Vita waiting for you inside.
Score.
It's a Japanese console in a Japanese car.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm optimistic. I think that it's, I, you know, I think that they may actually have something that people want to get. I think $250 is still more expensive than most people are willing to pay. But when the price comes down, I think it'll probably be an interesting product.
Yeah. Why is it then that we say that when they announced the Kindle Fire at $249, and especially at $199, we're saying that's really compelling, but mm-hmm. we think it's too much for the Vita?
Because a game console isn't something you use as much as a dedicated web browser, email client, and ebook reader.
Right. The value. Yeah, it's about a value because you can see yourself getting more use out of it. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, the Fire the tablet is almost a computer replacement, and the DS is a or the Vita, either one, 3DS, Vita, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a dedicated game console.
Well, and with the Fire, I think the word almost needs to be capitalized, bolded, larger typeface.
Yes. Plus, with the Vita,
there's an asterisk.
With any game console, you have to factor in the cost of games these days.
Yeah, every piece of software you add to costs you $50.
A Fire is almost a laptop in the same way that an Abacus is almost a laptop.
I mean, and the thing is, I played Chrono Trigger all the way out here, and I mean, while there are a lot of good games on there are more good games on the 3DS now, and there are some pretty promising looking launch games for the Vita. I mean, Chrono Trigger, man, that's a fucking great game.
I'm surprised you didn't play it on the iPhone.
I did play on that. Well, I played on the iPad, so I wouldn't kill my iPhone battery. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, there's so much real, like, quote unquote, real games out on the iPad right now. And Sonic CD is on the iPad.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's a fantastic port. So I don't know if that's been up on App of the Day yet. But Norm,
apart from the DSs, you should try to scrounge up an extra 3DS from Giant Bomb, and then we can have 3DS in the vehicle as well.
So, I guess you will both have 3DSs.
I don't have a 3DS.
I may be the only one here stupid enough to own a 3DS.
I might be able to borrow it.
No, I'm not suggesting you do, but I'm saying that you could probably scrounge one from Giant Bomb. For a few days.
I bet if you asked Brad really nicely, he'd let you borrow his for a week. We could play Mario Kart while we're driving. Why not?
Yeah.
Someone's got to drive, though.
How very exhibit.
Well, I can drive and play Mario Kart at the same time.
You like to drive while you drive, so I put a cart in your car.
Yeah, exactly. The problem is when I hit the horn to fire a turtle shell and that guy doesn't explode in front of me. What else is going on in the news?
Well, okay,
didn't
CES,
Microsoft say they're bailing out of CES?
Yes, yeah. CES.
Why is this not their last CES keynote?
This is the end of CES.
I know that Microsoft has traditionally, you know, had that key spot. It's been tradition that they deliver that keynote.
Yep.
I don't really remember the history of Microsoft keynote. Have they ever really done much?
Absolutely. They made plenty of announcements. And the keynote's kind of – it's not been as exciting since Bill Gates left.
It hasn't been exciting in a decade.
I think when Bill Gates was still doing it, it was still like an awesome place. Well, you're going to see Bill Gates talk.
Yeah, I would stand in a line to see Bill Gates talk.
Yeah, exactly.
I would stand in a line to get out of the building in which Steve Ballmer is talking.
Well, you'd be surprised how long the lines have been just to see Steve Ballmer talk.
Yeah.
The presentations, like last year was a big Windows Phone launch. The year before was the Windows 7 launch.
But hold on, no. Last year was the big Windows Phone launch, but Windows Phones had been out for 2 months at that point.
Yes, but they're still pushing it real hard. And that really excited lady talking about Windows Phone.
She was very excited.
And this year, we presume it's going to be Windows 8.
I've been following technology just, you know, as an enthusiastic amateur for many years. And I can't remember, my memory's not what it was, but I can't remember the last time I heard, you know, remember someone saying, oh my God, did you see are you looking at what's coming out of the Microsoft keynote? Oh, it just doesn't happen.
No.
So this is the illustrative of the problem with CES, right? The problem with CES is that January 9th through the 16th or whenever it is not a time that anybody is launching new products. So all the stuff that comes out for Christmas has been announced and out since August.
Unless you're a TV maker.
Even the TV people don't launch the hardware that they're going to show at CES.
The hardware never goes on
June
sale.
July.
They announce it, and then it goes on sale 4 months later.
Yeah, so August to June. Usually.
So, you know, so Microsoft released a fairly woolly statement saying, hey, you know, the tech market is changing, and we don't want to do things just simply because that's the way we've always done them. We're always adapting and blah, blah, blah.
Well, they're saying they don't want to be tied down to one schedule.
Right. So
and the way that they're developing products now, with longer product development cycles or different product development cycles and marketing schedules, they don't want to be locked
into making announcements. And that's entirely appropriate. I mean, to be honest with you, I understand why trade shows exist, but it's incredibly easy to get lost in all the noise. This is why Apple doesn't play that game. They just host their own events.
Yeah. Apple used to be tied to Macworld, and everyone expected an announcement at Macworld. And then when they pulled out of Macworld as both an exhibitor and the keynote, people were...
Now, there are, you know, smaller companies, like they've got some like speaker dongle or whatever. Yeah, you've got to go to CES because you have to attract the people that are there to look at other bigger stuff. But if you're Microsoft or Apple or Google, You can you are you you don't need to attract just traffic that are walking somewhere else. They're coming to see you, so you can have your own event whenever it pleases you.
Right. Sony, Microsoft, Intel, Samsung, Panasonic, and Toshiba, and probably some other people I'm forgetting, are all big enough. They don't need CES. I don't understand why they're there.
So what does because that what does that mean? CES is going to turn into a big Kentia hall?
I think it's all going to be Kentia next year. If you've been, you've probably never been to South Hall at CES. But South Hall at CES is bananas land. I mean, it is. There's a few huge booths at the front, but mostly it's like tiny booths with all sorts of crazy, awesome shit all the way back. Two floors. And they're both bigger than
Central
Hall. Solar-powered
pogo sticks
well,
and
starts,
crazy
starts
shit
with
like
your
that.
Big Kodaks and HP right. has a big booth there.
Yeah,
right?
cameras
and it goes,
stuff.
Goes back and you have Parrot and NVIDIA and then back and then far back and then it's the robot stuff.
It turns into a science
like the,
fair.
The Korean, yeah, it really is a science fair. Like the robots help old people. Like
that's fun in the same way that Kentia Hall is. It's fun to dig around.
Oh, yeah.
There's always some gems hidden
back
there.
From
that
there.
Stuff's so much cooler than the latest HDTV, which can do passive.
I mean, anyone
right
can
spot.
Roll up to the big fucking Microsoft, you know, Google thing and see the big bright lights and the fucking Black Eyed Peas music that's coming at you from everywhere. Yeah, I'm seeing the same shit everyone else is seeing. But you want to dig around and see the other stuff that's a bit off the beaten path that people didn't see.
And we'll be doing plenty of that. But the other side of the story for Microsoft not being at CES is the rumor that they just didn't want to pay for it anymore. And that CES wanted them to sign, get locked into a 3-year contract, 2012, 13, and 14. And to have both exhibit space and the keynote, and they just didn't want to pay.
So CES shot themselves in the foot here then?
Yeah, well, they gave them the finger and hit the
Microsoft
door.
Microsoft just wanted to do this next year because they obviously want a big Windows 8 push. And the last, I think, really big CES Microsoft was with Windows 7 because that's when they announced the public beta was available that night, which is great. It really helped Windows 7. Windows 7 being a good product also helped Windows 7.
Well, you know, Google or Eric Schmidt or someone will step into that slot, don't you think?
Google's,
I don't know,
Google
man.
Google never was part of CES because they did it.
Well, that's
events.
The thing. If you're all of these companies, if you're one of these companies we're talking about, like a Microsoft, there's only really a few, but so Microsoft, yeah. Google, Apple, I would say are the
well,
big
okay. no,
three.
No. It's Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon.
Yeah.
Those are
yeah, but, but Amazon and Facebook are not really, they're not CES exhibitors anyway, right?
They're not. That's why Facebook has
that's
their own
the point.
Conference. Amazon, I could see.
No, but I'm saying they're not even they're not even the kind of companies that would be really appropriate to be advertising at CES because they don't make consumer electronic products. Well,
Amazon does.
Amazon, yeah, a couple, yeah. but it's not really.
Google does.
Know. What?
Google does.
Yeah, Google makes. Yeah, but again, the point.
Talk about it every week.
But these companies are big enough that they don't need their own events, which means so that the company that is going to do the keynote is going to necessarily then going to be what a smaller company, and the whole profile
right.
of the show is going to lower.
Or telecoms.
Well, or Ford. I mean, right now the yeah. secondary keynote is Ford.
Yeah.
Right.
So car companies or someone from Verizon.
I'll
but
do
have CTIA.
CES, give me a call. I will have the audience on their feet, raising the roof.
Oh,
I'll
no.
play
the Gary Whitta keynote.
We'll do Mad Libs.
No, thanks. We'll get Jamie Kennedy.
We'll do Tech Mad Libs. Tech Mad Libs. Let's do it.
So here's the thing I think about CES.
Or
I don't
let someone do it and
go.
Have me and Will and Norm sit down in front like Mystery Science Theater and like
heckle.
Live heckle the keynote.
And get giant silhouettes.
We should totally do that.
God, we should just do that with the stream from the suite.
Yeah, we should do that anyway.
You should take some old cabbage and stuff to throw up on the stage too.
There was a projector in the suite last year, but it didn't work. Hopefully
didn't work.
This year it'll work.
Yeah. You were saying something, Will?
I was just going to say, I think that this marks the end of CES. I don't understand these 300,000 attendee giant trade shows make less and less sense in the world of the internet and the 24/7 news cycle. Because, I mean, it's not like they need to – in order to get all the coverage that they get out of CES, all that these people need to do is rent a suite or a ballroom at a hotel and invite a bunch of journalists there. And they'll get the same coverage out of that they would get out of CES. It just doesn't make sense anymore. And it costs an unbelievable amount of money.
It does.
We're in the same place that we ended up with E3 about 5-6 years ago.
Well, we've seen this happen before.
E3 bounced back.
Yeah, but E3 bounced back because they needed it to sell games to buyers. And they needed to get good press about games out to the main media. The consumer electronics market doesn't have an image problem like the games industry does. And no buyers are buying anything at CES. There's no reason to have it.
Right,
it's
Best
just
Buy
isn't
walking the floor looking at Samsung's new TVs, 3D TVs, and cherry picking the best ones for their storerooms.
Right. Right. And well, and then the unfortunate thing is that the interesting stuff, all the small guys that are fighting for attention in the 10 by 10 booths get screwed. But well, I mean, there's better ways for them to get their information out
well,
too.
But really to, cost them a lot okay, but to be fair, like you said, a big part of it is getting the mainstream coverage. All the mainstream national newspapers and TV news shows cover CES, right?
Yeah, but
now
but
you're
Gary,
saying if you're a mid-range company like a Logitech or someone like that, yeah, you can get some journalists to come and cover your shit. But like in the tech press, the only way you're going to get like a real national news media hit or something on the Today Show is if you manage to stand out as part of that big CES bundle.
Well, but it's easier to get on the Today Show if you send something really awesome to Wired and get them excited about it than if you go to CES and have a small booth.
I don't think it's for the Today Show. I think it's for like Fox News and CNN talking about big tech trends to start the year.
Right.
Think about the five most interesting products at the holiday season this year, right? It's the iPad, the Kindle Fire, the Kindle, an Android phone, and what's the fifth one? I don't even know. Probably an Ultrabook or a MacBook Air or something like that. None of those things are at CES. The Android phones might be. So why do people go to CES? It's all the second tier stuff and a bunch of iPhone cases.
I think a lot of people do care about that second tier stuff.
Well, but you're going to spend a week covering it, though. This irrelevant show.
I'm wondering if we made a mistake. Maybe we should go cover CTIA hard instead. Where
No! You've blown the whole deal. Vegas. We got to go.
You don't want to be a CTIA. Especially CTIA business. No.
That sounds really exciting.
How about a storage world?
Oh yeah, Storage World is awesome. I heard that was really good.
I would go to Storage World. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you go?
They
to Storage
have a lot
world?
To talk about this year with all the flooding.
Yeah, it's all about flash and floods, man. Yep. And flash floods. Wow, that was. Never mind.
I do like the idea of Waldorf and Statlering the keynotes. We should do that.
If I didn't think we'd get in big trouble for doing that, I would totally be down for that.
What are you afraid of?
Well, you know, they'll lock us out more than they already have.
All you gotta do is sit in the front row and get like throat mics and earphones so you can hear each other, but you can basically whisper the heckles.
Just sub-vocalize?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. That. I think the thing we should do is set up the couch in the suite. Project the keynote onto the screen in front of us.
Yeah, and so then that's, yes, that's exactly what we should do.
Just sit there and Norm, you can be.
Yeah,
Tom
I'm not suggesting we actually go there and like fucking heckle them live on stage. I'm suggesting your plan that we sit and heckle the live stream.
Regardless
stream
of what
out of that.
Any of us say, no one here, Will you included, would have the balls to yell "Ballmer sucks" in the middle of the CES keynote.
I would.
I wouldn't have the. It's not.
I will
it's not
pay
right
you,
to
Gary.
People's presentations. They spend a ton of money.
I wouldn't say Ballmer sucks because that's just like you can say that anyway. I would
suck
like,
my Ballmer.
No, it would be Ballmer. You suck. It would be directly at him.
Wow,
ladies and gentlemen, Gary Whitta.
I would chip in for that.
Yeah, but then I end up in a "don't tase me, bro" type situation. I don't want it. This is probably not worth it.
We get the taser test all done at once.
Exactly. Yeah, right? Two birds with one stone.
Yeah, so I think that this is a bad thing for CES. I think we see a much smaller CES, maybe just South Hall next year.
No, better enjoy this one while we can. It's all the dream is over.
I think I'm going to get Dave. I think Dave, we should get Dave to do the banners that say covering the final CES. I think this is the final countdown, man. They'll license some Europe songs for the opener of the show.
So you really think Microsoft pulling out is a bellwether for the whole show going down?
I think that as soon as everybody else is out of their contracts, they're bailing the hell out.
All right. I don't think so. I don't think people go there just for Microsoft. My
hunch is that the TV people pull together and make a TV launch event in April or May.
My very first time ever visiting CES was Chicago in 1993. My first time ever coming to America was to go to CES Chicago 93.
That was the second to last one in Chicago, too. They ended it in 94.
Was that the one where, like, you see those videos where Bill Gates, like, it's walking the show floor talking about, you know, the internet on computers and
the road ahead,
easy few, like, and you know, cell phones and mobile TVs and
so
stuff
his
like
first
that.
Keynote was 94, I guess the winter because it was the Vegas one. So that – I'm not sure if that was what that was from, but he started right then and did it for – did like 11 keynotes
till
after that.
2004.
He was great too. I loved hearing Bill Gates speak.
Imagine a world where you can buy concert tickets from your cell phone.
Well, remember they demoed like augmented reality at CES on like a phone, you know, years, like 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, and it blew all our minds. Like
WinMo 4.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad that his last two keynotes, 2007, 2008, were like the Vista years where they were showing off Windows Vista. Oh, look.
Yeah. Well, it was cool because it showed off like Surface was there. What else did they show off?
Obviously, Vista wasn't the only thing they had, but it was kind of a sad note.
Well, you say that, but what else did they have?
I guess it was just like the Surface was their cool tech demo.
The Zune.
Yeah, Zune. They really touted the Zune. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, who knows?
The other stuff was like the home room or living room, you know, the living room,
right?
Xbox
IPTV
stuff.
IPTV stuff. That
Halo Reach made its first trailer debut there, I think.
Oh, okay. Do they ever talk about Xbox stuff there, or do they leave that all for E3?
It's usually GDC and E3. Usually it's just like a check-in.
Some more like the, you know, the new Xbox experience.
That's the thing is, I wonder if
Media
Xbox
Center.
I wonder if Xbox 360 they might start kind of using that a little bit more now that it's becoming less, you know, not just a games box, but you know, TV in the living room, media center, all that stuff. It's feeling more Microsoft-y than it has in the past.
Yeah, there definitely is a segment just for Xbox as the platform, not necessarily the games.
Right.
But yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of stuff about the channels, the third-party content partners that are putting channels onto the new Xbox experience stuff.
Yeah,
that
I think so.
Like
and especially now, you know, you've got the Metro UI across all the devices now. They're definitely bringing it all together in a way that I think is pretty smart.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Gina's going to bring the dogs in here in a little bit.
Dogs with an S?
Yeah, there's Chloe's cousins are here.
Oh, my goodness.
Hardy, my dad's dog, and Dennis, who's my sister's dog.
Who let the dogs in?
Woof.
They're
woof,
all
woof,
corgis.
Woof.
Wow. They're all
That must
corgis.
Be amazing. What an experience.
It's like a video. It's like an internet video.
I remember when Will's parents came to visit the office, and I was talking with them. I'm talking with dogs. I'm like, corgis are lovely animals.
They are lovely animals.
I like corgis.
I'm glad you're on board.
Yeah, choice of the British royal family. See,
that's true. Yeah. So AMD made a big announcement yesterday. They released their next generation video card. They announced it. It's not actually out yet. It won't be on sale until January 9th. But they pushed the announcement up because they didn't want to get lost in the CES news, the news feed. The Radeon 7000 series, so 7970.
Oh, hello.
Was announced. And it's been a long time since we've seen a new high-end video card announcement. I think
a year, pretty much.
Is that the card that you got in last week that I saw?
Yes.
That thing is a monster.
That's the same size as your 5870.
I know, but something about the casing, the design, they look more and more cool and badass these days.
Yeah, the reference one this time is like it's shiny plastic, shiny black plastic as opposed to the matte black. I kind of
with red accents.
I
like that.
Really bright red accents. It's not the longest card. The longest card is the one that I tested in February, which was 1 foot long.
Holy shit.
And that was two GPUs. That was a 6990. And this is a single GPU card using their new GPU architecture. It's called Graphics Core Next. Southern Isle is the technical name, is the family. Tahiti is this chip. And it is really fast, really, really fast.
Well, hold on. In some of those benchmarks, though, it looked like 10% faster than the last gen card.
Which 10% over 10% over 10%, you know how hard it is to get those increments over time.
Okay. They always say that it's really hard, but I mean, they do it every time.
Well, that's because they plan out in advance. It's okay. For the price, though, because it is very expensive. It's $550 at launch.
Right. And that's a lot more than you need to be spending. Because as we've said before, we're at a point now where there is a massive, massive hardware overhead over where the games are. Right.
Oh,
that card will run the most demanding game at the highest settings with power to spare, right?
Well, it depends on the resolution, though. You look at Norm's benchmarks.
Now, the problem is a lot of games, like, for example, we use Batman Arkham City, right? Mm-hmm. Unreal Engine game, made for consoles and PC.
Yep.
On the consoles, technically a DX9 game.
Yep.
If you run it at DX9, the same settings that you get on the console, even a high resolution, like native 1080p, or no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Even 1600p, 2560 by 1600,
right.
No problem.
Right.
The problem is when you start adding these PC-exclusive features,
right.
Like DX11 and tessellation, which tessellation is a great feature, but they kind of needlessly add it in some places just to say they have it,
uh-huh.
Then the frame rates start to drop.
Okay.
Because the cards aren't necessarily as fast with these new features.
Right.
But if you're playing Skyrim, max settings, no problem.
Right.
StarCraft, max settings, no problem.
Right.
Well, so DX9 stuff is going to be a piece of cake, and anything DX10 or 11 will be more challenging, right?
Yeah, and again, $550 is super expensive for one single graphics card, and most people won't be buying this, but most people will be buying from this family of cards whenever AMD announces the mid-range version.
I mean, you could buy an Xbox 360, a PS3, and a few games.
Yeah, you can buy an Xbox 360, PS3, and a Wii, maybe.
No, not quite that much, but you could definitely get both. You can definitely get both of the good consoles.
Ads. Sorry.
Will's watching YouTube. Control yourself.
No, Will. That's the ad on our channel. It ran again.
Do you think features like tessellation are going to improve just over the lifespan of this card or the next couple of cards just through like better drivers and like better programming on the game development side?
Both.
You think that's definitely going to happen?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so talk about tessellation first, because this is something they've been pushing for the last two or three cards. Basically, what it does is turns a relatively small number of triangles into many, many more triangles and smooths out curves and stuff like that, right?
Yes, creates more geometry out of low geometry without using fake tricks like bump mapping and parallax mapping.
But aren't a lot of people – I mean, places aren't using it right though, right?
The place that are using it right now, terrain is where it really helps. So you turn like a flat piece of terrain in the distance to make it, you know, hills will now have way more detail at their crests. Like statics, like character models. So for example, like the geometry of a face, you can modify that over time to add like much more definition on like the costuming or like headgear and stuff like that. There's a really cool NVIDIA demo with an alien that was walking.
Okay.
Watch like tessellation on the character transform the body.
That's easily like one of my favorite tech demos I've ever seen. Yeah. Just awesome.
Those technology. Tech demos, I covered video cards for a really long time. Those tech demos are always very best case where they use an entire pixel budget for like one character or one character's face or something like that, though. I don't mean to, I'm sorry, I'm being a negative Nancy today.
They're never realistic. Like, you never see something that awesome show up in a real game for years and years.
No. But they are tech demos for a reason. The tech demos are, I think, maybe my favorite part, because I just like seeing what your graphics card can do for even one scene. The one they had for this launch, they have not revealed yet. But it is very Pixar-esque and very cool.
All right, sounds good.
The other cool thing about this new card is that it's the first graphics card to be built on a 28 nanometer process. So they went from 40 to 28. They skipped 32 nanometer, which means it's really, really power efficient. They use less power. The die, I don't know if the yields are. If the yields on 28 are reliable, yeah. I mean, that's probably why the card is kind of expensive.
Does that mean there's also less of a leaf blower effect?
Well, they did redesign the fan and the vapor cooling system, so yes.
Like, is the TDP the same, Norm?
TDP is lower. So max TDP, I think, is 235.
Hold on. Explain what TDP is first. Sorry.
TDP is how much wattage the video card will use, whether at idle, you know, or doing minimal work.
How much heat it generates, basically.
How much power consumes and how much heat it generates are tied directly together.
Okay.
So it's measured in watts. And some cards use up to like almost 300 watts of power at full load. That's extremely hot, extremely loud, and it'll kill your power supply if you have multiple cards. TDP did not go up with this generation, and the minimum TDP went down, so idle TDP. So like last generation, I think it was we're at like 23 watts. Just at idle, so your graphics card is sucking 23 watts of power.
Okay.
Just when you're in Windows. With this card, it's going to take 15 watts at Windows. But if Windows turns off your screen, so not like turning off the monitor, but if it goes to a black screen, it'll drop down to 3 watts.
Wow, that's impressive. The old ones would drop to like 19, I think, right?
Or if that.
Or 17 or something like that.
I always found that kind of disconcerting, though, when I put my graphics card in, that You can hear when the card is being asked to work. Like, you know, you boot up a game or, you know, you walk into a graphically intensive area or whatever, and you can hear the card suddenly go, like, as it's suddenly being asked to do a lot more work, drawing more power, generating more heat. The fan has to spin up more, as you say.
You know, well, that can be kind of distracting.
Yeah, it's like your computer's like gasping for
I'm worrying it's okay.
And you're worried that, I mean, yeah, he's going to blow up. Hand over, because I have the
computer. It's like a space heater.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
It's perfectly normal. Everything's cool.
Halogen lights on top, computer at the bottom, the room is heated.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
That's one of the reasons I've been enjoying playing PC games in the living room lately is that, you know, I'm insulated from the sound.
You're insulated from the danger too. It's like, unlike your cabinet where you can hear the PS3 like rumbling.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You know, for that to explode, your computer's in another room and that could explode and you'll be safe.
Summer or the OG Xbox. I mean,
summers in Georgia for me were hell because I had to make the choice between having my computer on all day so that I could use it or not being miserably hot all the time because of the extra heat it brings.
That's right. Like, we don't really get that because, I mean, summer in San Francisco is not warm. Right?
Hey, we have 1 week, man.
Right. We're lucky if we get in the high 80s, but in places in the country where people are playing games.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine weather, like New Mexico or something?
Yeah. I mean, that actually affects the performance of the card. So
I remember talking to guys in Texas who in the summertime when it's 103 degrees outside, their computer room's 85, 90, 100. Their computers just implode, basically. It's just all over.
It just says they give up. The computer's thrown a towel. That's it. Having a moderate TDP also means that the card is pretty overclockable. It's clocked at – the core clock's 925 megahertz. And they say that – their partners may release factory overclock to a 1 gigahertz easy, maybe even 1.1 gigahertz, and they have one in their lab that, you know, maybe can go up to 1.2 gigahertz. So it's going to be overclockable.
So also
3 gigs of DDR5 RAM.
And does this do they do something crazy like NVIDIA does on this where they double clock the shaders, or does it just have a whole shitload of shader units?
Whole shitload of shader units.
Do you remember how many?
2048, I think.
Are you kidding? Really?
Well, stream processors. They're not comparable.
But still, I mean, so the stream processors are basically multifunction things that can do vertex shading, pixel shading, or I don't remember what the other one's called. The third thing. Doesn't matter.
All right, Rick Perry. Come on, let's move on.
Hey, I'm not running for governor here. President, whatever.
But the upshot is that I think it's an impressive card. I think it's priced a little high since its nearest competitor is GTX 580, which came out last year.
Yeah.
And that's gone down in price a fair bit.
Yeah.
NVIDIA doesn't have an answer to this right now. So
this is definitely the new hotness if you want to have to be able to say that you've got the top card out there for the next few months at least.
Right. And, buy two of these.
But you don't need to be spending anything like this much money to be getting great performance.
No, you don't.
Well, especially if you don't turn on AA and run it 2560 by 1600.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So what? How does this compare to – what has this done to the existing ATI cards prices? Are they going through the floor?
No, I don't think so. Because
this is a soft launch. It's not coming out until early January, right?
January 9th. And they had some charts about how this fits into their lineup. And they're going to be shifting things around. They had nothing to say about future cards. In the 7000 series.
Yeah, but they're always they do the same thing every time. They release either a high-end or a mid-range, and then they release the other one. Yep. This is the high-end, clearly. High-end.
Yeah.
The mid-range is going to come in at the normal price point, so it'll be 100, 250, 200,
no, the mid-range 300. Probably like 250, 250, 300 for a good mid-range card, and that's the one most people are going to buy and put in Crossfire.
So, but the thing is, it's always better to run a single card than to do Crossfire two GPUs on one card, right?
If you get the same performance, I would not say always. I would do it. I would choose that. With this card, that might not be the case because think about it. The second card you add, for example, if there was a card like the 7870, right? This is 7870. Yeah. If there was a 7870 and you had two of those and it had graphics core next with the zero core feature, the second card when you're not gaming.
What's the zero core feature?
That's the low idle temp TDP. The second card only uses 3 watts.
Yeah, but it's not about the power consumption, which is important. It's more about driver compatibility and having problems with games like Batman. Because like Batman still isn't right on Crossfire setups.
I agree. I would always, based on my experience with SLI, to be fair, I was on the SLI side, but Crossfire obviously is a similar idea. It's an additional level of things that can go wrong. As Will likes to say, it's more points of failure.
The game profile stuff, I mean, with the new Catalyst drivers, the profiles are being released way more frequently.
That's
and
true.
And customizable game profiles also, if you want to set up the Crossfire manually.
But I mean, so I guess there's two types of people that play PC games. There's people like Gary and me that just want to sit down and mash the button on Steam and have the game work and be awesome. And then there's the people that like to fuck around with their computers and play games for a fraction of the time that they're spending fucking around with the computer. I get that. I've been there. I used to do that. But now I don't have that much time to play games. And when I do, then I wanted to sit down and have fucking Batman work. And if it doesn't, I'm going to be sad.
I agree. And that's why I often come off as being so impatient, is when I do finally find time to sit down and play a PC game. I've got a certain amount of time. I don't want to waste any of it fucking around getting it working. I just want it to work.
Well, I actually have a lot of fun in the settings menu.
I know you like, do. And the best point that Will was making there, for some people, that is a big part of the fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's like, oh, look at all these features. I can turn
just
them
like
on
people
on.
Like tinkering with their cars on the weekends and stuff. I mean, that's not for me. I just want to get in a car and drive
it around.
I just want to drive. I don't want to have to fix it.
Speaking of cars that we want to drive, come 2012.
Yeah.
Are you in, Gary?
For what?
Tesla S?
Oh, I thought you were going to get... I thought you were going to start playing the December to Remember jingle.
Oh.
I thought I was going to get a Lexus. Fuck. It's just not, no matter how many hints...
1% Norm's buying us all Teslas?
No matter how many hints I drop, he won't help... Norm's not going to get me that Lexus that I want.
Tesla comes out with their model...
The S?
The S.
Yeah.
I think... What is it called? The Model S?
I think it's just called the Tesla S.
Yeah, Tesla.
Oh, it's the Model S.
Model S, yeah.
And okay. It's only $50,000. Yay.
Well, $57,500.
Right.
Before
minus the federal.
$7,000.
Now, what's the range on this thing right now? Because that's you can get different battery options, right?
Yeah.
So I would have to get the top battery level.
Top battery level, the range is 230.
See, even
$90,000.
300 miles?
300 okay. miles. I think $70,000 was the base price.
Yes.
And then, but if you want GPS and stuff.
There was a $60,000 one.
Right, there's a $50,000. Then a $60,000 and a $70,000, and there are three different ranges for that. And 300 miles is the biggest battery.
Right.
Right.
Maybe if I somehow manage to crawl my way into the 1% next year.
And supposedly they're setting up like charging stations across the country. They haven't said how many those there are going to be.
Yeah.
But it sounds like based on the way they're building these out, that they'll be close enough that you could drive 300 miles to one to another and
right.
do
and,
a cross-country road trip.
And also in terms of the price of the car, I think there's – I don't know what the government's going to do, but there's usually a fairly attractive tax offset.
That's what we're saying. The tax offset – these are prices including the tax offset.
Oh.
It's like so $7,500.
Right. It's $75,000 like minus the $7,000 tax offset.
Right. Okay.
And hold on. A tax offset is just where they take it off the top here. It's like a – it's like a flexible spending account or something, right?
I'm not exactly sure. I think it might be a rebate.
I think when you do your taxes at the end of the year, you say you bought a certain kind of vehicle and they take it off your taxes.
Right.
Oh, okay.
They take $7,000. Yeah.
It's not like an instant mail-in rebate or something.
And then your accountant charges $4,000.
Yeah.
You need to get a different accountant.
But
unless
all
you,
these cars,
I don't know how complicated your finances are.
It's supposed to be shipping
not complicated.
They're supposed to come out in 2012. Yeah.
Yeah. So it comes out in 2012, and basically all the ones they have scheduled to make in 2012 are sold already or reserved.
Ah, well, fuck it. I don't know.
They said they can only make 7,000, I guess, which seems kind of light, but I guess this is not
maybe
yeah,
I'll hold
not
out
exactly
for that electric DeLorean that they're bringing back. Maybe I'll get one of those instead.
That thing's going to weigh 3,000 pounds, though. It'll go like 15 feet on batteries.
Well, I'm sure they've thought of that.
Unless it has a Mr. Fusion.
Maybe it does. I'll just feed it potato peelings and empty beer cans.
Yeah, I would feel ripped off if I bought an electric DeLorean and it didn't have at least a fake Mr. Fusion in the back, working or not. Like, it's got to have
you don't
that.
Really want that.
Oh, you totally want – why would you have a DeLorean if not for the Back to the Future reference? Who remembers
that? Seems
DeLorean
like because the car itself is a Back to the Future reference without any of the stuff that got bolted onto it.
I suppose. I think you have to at least have the vents on the back. They weren't on the stock ones, were they?
I love the DeLorean. It's a beautiful car. I would have bought one, but they're very difficult to get parts for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Ryan McCaffrey over at OXM has one.
Yeah, once you've committed to it, there are dealerships and places that you can take it to. You know, obviously there's a community out there that you'll get support. But it's like specific things like, you know, the hydraulic gullwing doors.
Mm-hmm.
If like one of those hoses go, you know, you're fucked looking for a DeLorean gullwing door hose, which is, you know, not necessarily something you just go to fucking Pep Boys and pick up.
And only 50 of those, there's maximum 50 in the United States that can have the out-of-time license plate.
Right.
That's true. And actually, those out-of-time license plates are probably all gone by people who get the
long
reels.
Gone.
But you'd want to go to the next level and get the barcode, wouldn't you?
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah,
not strictly legal though.
Ones
you can put it on one or the back. You can put it on one.
You could jobs
other.
It. You could just buy a new DeLorean every month.
Yeah.
Mm.
So yeah, we're going to hope to my dream next year is to drive one of those Tesla Model S's. Not to own one, just to drive one.
They'll probably send you one. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they got,
they got plenty of them sitting around.
Go to put on your best 1% clothes. Go to a Tesla showroom and ask for a test drive.
Jeans and a t-shirt, right?
It's not difficult to drive one of these things.
And bring a flip cam.
Yeah.
Just drop a David Bowie as Tesla reference and you'll be golden. Mm.
Ooh.
Call Elon Musk.
Just walk in, you know, on your cell phone saying things like, if it drops below 50, sell it. tell him to go fuck himself. What time is it in China right now? We need to close down that international division. Blah, blah, blah.
I love it when you're wrong and I'm right and we make a movie.
Yeah. And then the guy's going to be all over you.
Yeah.
I left the fire in my desk drawer at the office, so I haven't tried.
Oh, is that where it is?
Without, yeah.
Oh, but there was a story you tweeted that story that Wide said that with the update it's not improved very much.
Yeah. So Amazon has released a long-awaited software update to the Kindle Fire, which supposedly fixes a lot of the speed problems and also navigation problems. Mm-hmm.
I noticed Ryan tweeted, he said that it was noticeably faster with the update, whether or not it's as fast as it should be.
Right.
Still, you know, shit is
still not blazing fast.
I stand by, I still think that when you say it's shit, that is a gross overstatement.
Well, he said it was unusably slow.
Did he say that was the case after the update?
That was the direct quote, was unusably slow.
So much faster, but still unusably slow.
I mean, just to be clear, the base level of performance here isn't an iPad. The base level of performance is a $200 netbook browsing the internet, right?
Right.
If it's not better than that, it's unusably slow.
Okay.
That's what I say.
Oh, that's the other big news, isn't it? The end of the netbook, it seemed like, was another thing that broke.
Dell is no longer making netbooks.
Yeah. I think it's kind of just announcing the end of the netbook. It actually happened a while ago.
Yeah, this is kind of like one of those stories when you hear that they're making the last batch of VHS tapes or something. It's like the technology was already dead, right. But like,
now, here's
the final troop pullout, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when ASUS finishes selling netbooks, I think that's the end of the netbook for real. I think somebody pointed that out on Twitter after I posted that Dell story with a kind of aggressive note attached to it. And I think that they're probably right. I think the ASUS stuff marked the beginning and the end of the netbook.
I think we can mostly agree that it is more, if not dead, at least moribund.
But you know what? A lot of people were perfectly happy with those computers. And even not people like who don't know how to use computers. Some people were perfectly happy using those as, you know,
I briefly considered getting one.
I used one for about a year and a half or 2 years, and it was okay.
I used a few. I went to like a Best Buy where they had a bunch of them in a row, and I tried my hand at a few, and I found the experience to be mostly miserable.
Well, so a lot of them had problems with touchpads. A lot of them had too small keyboards. A lot of them were just woefully underpowered.
And if you
just wanted to use it to take notes at college, it was fine for that. And the battery lasted all day. So, I mean, there is a place for that kind of stuff, but it shouldn't be a trend.
The big issue, though, it's not a like-for-like comparison because you don't expect – obviously, the Kindle experience, the tablet experience is custom-made to be a very simple type experience. You're not expecting a fully featured Windows type suite. And that was one of the reasons why netbooks, I think, sucked, is because the real estate of a netbook screen, while not really that different from, you know, when you think like a Kindle Fire type tablet, the Kindle Fire UI is built to look okay on that screen. Whereas trying to get like a full Windows screen running on a netbook, on a screen the size of a netbook, it just looks awful. You realize how tiny it is.
Ran Ubuntu onto there. It's right. Netbook versions
lighter
of OSs that would be optimized for that type of screen,
right?
And this type of applications.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I like my 11-inch MacBook, even I find the screen size quite restrictive sometimes.
Oh, the vertical screens. That's why the dock is on the side.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I moved the dock on the side and did a bunch of stuff to kind of maximize the real estate that is there.
That's why I hate the Google Plus toolbar. On Google Docs.
Yeah, it just costs you that much real estate.
Yeah.
Well, you can command shift F to F it away.
Yeah. Yeah, just do that. F it away.
Off.
F off, dude.
That's the easy way to remember that shortcut.
F off. Hey, Will, that was a good tip you posted the other day about Windows L. I liked that.
Oh, the second greatest Windows keyboard L? Shortcut in
well,
the world?
I don't use Windows.
Oh, okay.
But I tweeted a response saying, what would be the OS X equivalent? And I got a bunch of people responded with like a very simple workaround tip.
It's Control-Eject, I think, right? Or Command-Eject.
Well, the tip that I got, and that may be the case, I don't know, but the tip that I got, which I'm doing now, is if you set
Well, I don't have the password thing, but you can set up your screen to require a password anytime it wakes from sleep. Mm-hmm. And then just set a hot corner to put the machine asleep. So all you do is like just knock your mouse into a corner, get up. That's your Windows L. And when you come back, it's going to want a password.
Yep.
And so that's cool as well.
Coming back from sleep also is super fast.
Right.
On MacBook Air. So it's not a long delay. Yeah.
Well, if you still have an eject button on your keyboard, or on your Mac keyboard, so I think your Airs don't have an eject button.
We do not.
But if you have a physical eject button, you can press Control Eject, and that does the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know what the point of an eject button on a machine without a disk drive would be.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the log off button too, apparently. Who knew?
Okay. Check those USB keys, which I never do. I just unplug a USB storage device, and I get the warning.
One of these days.
And you're a bad person, Chan.
Has anyone ever had a drive broken?
I always do. I always drag it into the trash first, unless for some reason I forgot. Not because I really think it's going to damage the drive. I think it's up there with, you know, your cell phone, Words with Friends is going to make the plane crash.
Yeah.
But just because I'm kind of anal about it and I like the nice clean eject process doing it, you know, the correct
way. You want to hear the garbage sound and the bottom.
Well, you don't get the garbage sound. You get that little spring sound when you eject a
you're afraid like a little, of the warning a little pop up like you did something wrong.
Yeah, I don't like that stern warning, that exclamation point that tells me I did something wrong. I don't like it when my computer berates me. I am the master. We are still the masters of machines.
You don't get that in Windows though.
Berate my computer, does not berate me.
Well, no, but in Windows, it's difficult. It's way more difficult to eject something even though you're supposed to.
What does Windows do if you just yank the drive?
Nothing. It doesn't do
anything. Oh, it doesn't care?
But there's a way technically to eject.
We almost lost a podcast, the PAX podcast, because I just yanked the USB thumb drive out.
Well, you did lose it.
Well, and then Rufo brought it back.
Right.
Rufo and company, which was very nice of them.
But did you yank it while it was still transferring data? Like, was the light going off and stuff?
Let's just not talk about it anymore and just say mistakes were made and leave it at that.
The answer is yes.
Possibly.
Because that is a no-no.
Yeah.
Well, the guy behind the desk said it was done and I just trusted him. I didn't look and then I yanked then boom. That was on a Windows machine though, not a Mac.
Speaking of the Kindle Fire, DisplayMate ran a...
are you going to do a quick look at the Fire with the new update? Or you do some kind of coverage on whether it actually is any better?
Now that I know that Will has it here, we'll put the update on. I mean, if it's...
I'm reasonably sure it's in my desk drawer.
Okay.
It's either there or my house desk at home.
I'll install the update, and I guess I haven't used the Fire too much without the update.
I'm curious to see what it looked like with the update.
I guess I have to test it first without the update, do the update.
Yeah, scroll around a bit and then update it and see what it looks like afterwards. Yeah.
I mean, the story is whether it actually improves it or not. There are some UI changes.
My question is also, now that they've fixed it, because I don't know the logistics of this, how quickly can they get new updated machines into the channel so you don't have to fuck around with this?
Well, so the process when you set up the Fire is real straightforward. When you first turn it on, it asks you for your Amazon login and your Wi-Fi setup. And then it says, hey, do you want to download the update? Boom.
So it isn't necessarily. I mean, eventually, obviously, it'll be there in the firmware. But, you know, the first thing you've got to do is update the software.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to miss that.
No.
And it's in Amazon's interest to be proactive about that because they don't want people to have a lousy experience that don't need to be having a lousy experience.
And the Kindle app was also updated on iOS devices. Features you can email yourself documents.
It's just the iPad version, iPhone version.
Yes. So I can email a PDF or have someone email me a PDF and approve their email address and be able to read that PDF on my iPad.
I'm pleased that the Kindle app's getting more robust. They've made some good updates lately because at first I preferred iBooks because I just liked the gloss of it and I like the integrated store. Kindle's obviously not going to get that on iOS, but they've added a lot of bells and whistles to Kindle now. And I want to be using Kindle because I want to have the security of knowing that I can get the same book on my regular Kindle and it's just more flexible, less of a closed system than Apple's offering. But I didn't love the kind of bare bones nature of the experience on Kindle, but they've improved it a lot lately. So that's good.
And then, so I was talking about the Nook tablet and the Kindle Fire. DisplayMate ran a battery of tests on those screens, and they came to the conclusion that the Nook tablet screen is much better than the Kindle Fire screen.
Much better.
Much better. And even better than
iPad? For reading books or across the board?
Just across the board. They gave it, they said basically it's about as good as the iPad. The iPad 2 still has a really good screen, which is especially harder to do when it's a 10-inch screen versus 7 inches. But they gave the Nook tablet the nod for being the best overall by you know, a small margin.
So if someone came to you at this point and said, I know basically what these tablets are. I can read books and watch videos and buy stuff in the store and, you know, basic games and stuff. I know I want to get one, but I don't know which one to get. Would you hesitate to recommend the Nook over the Kindle Fire at
yes,
this point?
Yes, absolutely. Don't buy the Nook.
Really? So don't buy either, in your estimation.
Okay, so here's the thing. If you just want to buy books from the Kindle, from the Barnes & Noble store, the Nook is great. The app support is really weak. They really limit the amount of space on the 16 gigabytes of onboard memory that you can use for third-party stuff. And they wipe that space every time you reboot. So if you put some third-party apps on and then restart the Nook, then it wipes that stuff, which is really a bummer. Now, that said, if you're going to take it, root it and install your own ROM on it, then the Nook is a much better choice than the Kindle. It's already rooted. I think there's even a version of Ice Cream Sandwich working on it, or if not, final one, there's an alpha or something that's been leaked. So you can actually run a real OS on the Nook. You know, there's ethical issues with that, but I kind of, you know, they're the ones who are selling it for the price they sell it for. I wouldn't buy either of those to use with the stock experience.
Someone had to buy one. That said, haven't tested the new Fire.
Do you think, Will, that, you know, we talk about what's ahead for tablets in 2012, and that seems to be the sector that finally will kind of mature next year with some interesting stuff to seriously kind of rival the iPad and kind of establish dominance in this cheaper field where, you know, the $200, $250 price point. Do you think that something's going to, like you're saying, that isn't really there yet with the current incarnation of the Fire and the Nook? Do you think we will see something in 2012 that is the one you would recommend, either from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or from someone else?
I don't think it's out of the question. I think that I think a second generation Fire is very interesting. I think they're clearly paying attention to the stuff that they've messed up. They're going to fix the problem, the physical interface problems, at some point in the not terribly distant future, in the next year for sure.
I mean, again,
they'll add a home button and add volume buttons.
I agree. I think it's not ideal. The way that they did it is clearly not ideal. But I think Amazon had to get into this space. You can't just let Apple keep gobbling up consumers and getting them into their ecosystem.
Yeah.
Every Christmas, I think they need to get it before Christmas. The question is, how many people do they turn off with, you know, what seems to be a substandard product?
That's the thing, is I think that this, the Fire especially, could end up, it's selling really well. It could end up being a really bad thing for tablet perception amongst people who are not technical, because they're going to get this, they're going to take it home, they're going to be disappointed, they're going to put it in the drawer. 9 months from now, they're going to think, oh, hey, I wonder what happened to that tablet I had. Oh, no, I don't really want another tablet. They kind of suck. And they're going to netbook a product that's actually quite good. A product category that's actually quite good.
And a lot of the rumors around the Fire were that Amazon had another tablet, either a bigger one or a follow-up in development, that would be released fairly early in 2012. So it'll be interesting to see
like
if the
Fire
sales
DX or something
really like suffer from the Fire being kind of a disappointment, or if, you know, they actually build a user base out of that or what.
Well, that's how they could justify releasing one that's, you know, different size, having more features of volume buttons. If they did another one that was the same size, like a 7-inch tablet, people who bought the first-gen Fire would be really pissed
off. It really goes to show that, you know, because, you know, I had a lot of, I still do sales, but I still think Amazon is going to get this right. Again, the Fire's not the perfect way to start, but they have made a start. And again, I don't think it's as bad as some people are saying. But the fact that even Amazon, who's really kind of they were the great white hope, they were the ones we thought we were going to get this right, and Barnes & Noble as well have done their own thing.
Great white hope?
Yeah, it's a boxing.
That's super racist, dude.
Dude, you haven't been alive long enough. Go Google it. It's a boxing analogy.
Okay.
Carry on.
The point I was making is the fact that I'll try and do this short without any possible racist missteps that you can glom onto. The fact that Amazon and Barnes & Noble, with these two highly, you know, hyped products, even they kind of stumbled out of the gate, just goes to show how difficult it is to get tablets right. Apple made it look easy. And everyone else has subsequently showed that it is not easy at all to find the right mix of performance and price and ecosystem. It's very difficult.
Apple had an advantage with iOS being very good.
Yeah.
At that point,
piggybacked off the iPhone.
Well, but even if you look back to the iPad 1 launch, when a pre-iOS 4 iPad, compared to what we're looking at today, even on the iPad 1, it's a substantially worse product. And the Fire is better than the iPad 1 was in everything except for the browser performance, I think. And the dumb UI design, the dumb physical button designs. The thing is, Amazon's in. This is another situation where the company's in it for the long haul, and they're going to keep at it until they get it right.
I think Jeff Bezos just jumps out of a window, having heard that. He's like, well, that's it.
If Jeff Bezos is listening to the podcast, I'm really excited.
Yeah, you'd be thrilled to hear.
We do remember product generations differently. Like, it's tough to remember what the very first iPhone was like from a software experience. I mean, the hardware, you can have the hardware, but I don't know anyone who still has the very first.
I don't remember
iPhone
what the
OS.
I don't remember what the performance
phone.
Was like in terms of like sliding around. I still have one at home. I could power it up and see what it looks like.
Did you never update the software?
No,
and I'm sure you did.
It probably has iOS 2 on it.
I mean, but you know what we can remember is it was very, very bare bones. You know, black background, no wallpapers, no store, no apps. You know, it was very, very basic.
All the web shortcuts you needed.
And at the time, still so far ahead of what everything else was going on. Yeah.
The big difference between the iPad and the other tablets is that Apple made really smart decisions about what to leave out. What to focus on, and they focus on the things that people end up using these devices for.
And that's
shaped this entire market.
But that's the great irony, though, Will, is that Apple did the hard work and basically showed you what to do and what not to do, and everyone's had the luxury of being able to kind of stand on their shoulders, and yet still have not come up with a viable competitor.
Well, that's the thing, is they didn't take the same lessons from it that Apple did. And that's why we've seen the whiff on the Android tablets, and that's why the Fire's not living up to
standards. Well, so that's the other thing. Microsoft has taken those lessons,
but that's
they release a good Windows Phone 7 OS, and you know, and they promise updates that, and if you compare Windows Phone 7 when it launched to even iOS 2, you know what was available. There was a lot more in Windows Phone 7. It's not quite up to iOS 5.
Hold on, iOS 3 launched when Windows Phone 7 launched. Be careful.
Well, iOS 3, it's still. It's not up to iOS 5, but people are very unhappy, or some people have been unhappy and are still complaining that Windows Phone 7 doesn't have everything that the iPhone has.
Well, and it doesn't. I mean, there are big notable omissions. They're adding them as they update.
That's what I'm saying. You can't just jump in and start from scratch now. You can't release a product in a vacuum.
And the other point is, as much as, you know, it just went on about how Apple kind of showed other companies how to do it, there are a lot of things that Apple showed us how to do that other companies can't just imitate, because again, we've seen this in the news this week. Apple is being very, very, very aggressive about how they're protecting the things they believe they own the patents on. And so there are certain very cool little features, multi-gestures, different, you know, ways of doing things that we now kind of accept as the language of these devices and how it should be done. But companies are going to have to, even though the obvious way to do it is right there in front of them, they're going to have to work around it, because Apple will stamp on them if they copy that. So that's an additional problem.
Or it just looks like they copied it.
Right.
So the big question I have for you guys is, do you think that Microsoft – I mean, Microsoft is clearly pushing Metro out with Windows 8, especially if they continue on this insane scheme to replace the start menu with the Metro tiles. I mean, do you think that they're hoping to see a similar halo effect but a reverse halo effect from what Apple saw with iPod, iPhone to Mac? Do they hope to see it the other way from the existing Windows users?
I'm sure Microsoft would love to be able to, because that's just a general concept rather than stealing like a specific idea. I'm sure Microsoft would love, because you see already with what they're doing with Windows Phone 7 and the new Xbox experience. As Norm said, one of the very smart things about what they did with the iPad was many, many people that came to it, even though it's a pretty easy thing to use, you didn't have to learn anything from scratch because you already understood the language from the iPhone. It was just a bigger version. People that joked about, just a big iPhone. That was actually one of the big selling points of it. One of the reasons why it'd be so popular right out of the gate is there was no learning curve at all. I think Microsoft,
also one of the big negatives.
I think Microsoft would love that, though, in the sense that like, for example, you're now an Xbox user using the new Xbox experience, and you get used to the kind of Metro navigation, you'll hope in 6 months from now could pick up a Nokia Windows Phone 7 and be familiar with the interface.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like Windows is such an ingrained thing in like the technology world. Like, people just associate a computer with Windows that I'm not sure that there would really be much carryover into them wanting to buy a phone or an Xbox that has a similar interface.
It's not necessarily going to compel you to do it. It just lowers the barrier to entry. It's one very small granular thing in your Arsenal, and you know the business is so competitive now that you need every little hook you can get. People make decisions over what phone to get on based on the most, you know, the tiniest little personal preferences and things that please them. Yeah. You ask people like, why do you have the phone? You're surprised sometimes. I do it a lot. I ask people why they pick the phone that they picked. And what are the things they like about their phone as opposed to another one they could be using? The answers will often surprise you. They're things that you wouldn't think of, and they're often very personal to them and their own prejudice about what kind of experience they enjoy.
Yeah, their priorities.
So you got to stack the deck every way you can.
Yeah, and Metro isn't, you know, it's a design philosophy with some design elements. Xbox, Windows Phone 7, and Windows 8, while all have Metro elements, operate completely differently. From a navigation standpoint,
right? Because yeah, you know, it's weird, isn't it? That's a good point. So you want to create a similar design language, a consistent design language, but they obviously each device has its own parameters. So with the Xbox, you're either using a pad or you're, again, it's a little bit similar in that you can do the Kinect version. You're still kind of moving your hand around like you are on a touch device with a tablet or Windows 8 tablet or a Windows Phone 7 phone. So they want to try and kind of make it as it's comforting. It you know, it feels good when you can take some of the skills you've already learned onto another device because the language has, you know, a lot of the same rules.
All after all the shit we talked about Microsoft's press conferences at CES always being boring, I'm really interested to see something closer to final UI at CES next month.
Well, I mean, they'll have to be close because February is beta.
If it's their last one, do you think, you know, they'll do something all out? Like Ballmer will just take a shit on the stage or something?
I think that's guaranteed to happen.
Yes. I
then you could say, you suck, Ballmer.
Ballmer out. And the lights just go. And that's it.
I could see him like dropping the mic and just walking
yeah,
away.
Just drop the mic. And as you hear all the feedback, he just fucking walks off the stage.
Drops fuck CES, his yacht. Fuck CA. And God bless America.
Life ain't nothing but bitches and money. Ballmer out. Drop the mic. What that's the end of CES right there.
Except that the keynote opens CES. Right. Everyone goes home.
That's it. They just pull the plug on CES.
That's it, right?
Because it's like, hey, we can't possibly follow that.
Yeah.
Oh, what else we got on news? I'm tired of talking about Microsoft crap.
Hey, can I say, I think Norm's doing a great job hosting. Norm's
doing a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And I had to stare at Will's face the whole time.
I just like seeing his red headband. Is that to keep your hair out of the place?
That's his headphones.
Oh, okay.
These are the Soul Republics.
Hey, did you see that Ludacris has got his own headphones now? There's like a whole black. No. There's a whole like gray market. Everyone trying to copy the Dr. Dre.
You're partially responsible for this there with your Beats.
I had nothing to do, as you know, Will. As I pointed out many times before, I had nothing to do with that decision.
I just like trolling you about it.
That's all right. It's fine. But yeah, so you got a Radio Shack now, and Ludacris has got his own headphones. It seems like they figured out that if you attach a rapper's name to some headphones, you can charge ridiculous amounts of money for them and people will still buy them.
For people buying them,
even if your company has a reputation for price gouging ridiculously
like,
on products.
It's not even like this rapper or this artist, you know, recommends and this is their headphone of choice. They have to have something like, oh, Ludacris was involved in the design.
Oh, yeah.
The audio design.
That just because
consumers are very smart and cynical these days. You see a celebrity endorse a product. You go, yeah, they paid him a bunch of money. So they have to do what they did with Drove. So he was really hands-on.
I don't really care
about the audio experience.
I really don't want Ashton Kutcher to have hands-on experience with the design of Nokia or Nikon cameras.
I mean, I kind of get it though. If your name's going to be on headphones and you know you make your money in the music business, you're not going to want it to sound shitty.
But you don't understand how the music business works, Gary.
It depends how fat that check is.
Right.
That's I mean, you know, I'm not.
Dre had hands-on with those monster.
I still agree.
But he was signing the check.
The sound that Ludacris, I'm sure, was most concerned about was the sound of the fucking money truck backing up to his house. Having said that, and the sound of his own
quality,
the sound of his own laughter as he drove to the bank. But again, you're not going to do yourself any favors in the long term if you've got 1,000 people on the internet going, these Ludacris headphones are shitty.
Oh man, I better not see those in the next Fast Furious movie.
Oh, you probably
Fast
will.
Fast Six.
Oh.
Fix.
That'd be so meta because he's not Ludacris in the movie. He's a character. So he said, "Hey, these Ludacris, these Ludacris headphones are the best. I got to follow this artist, Ludacris. He has a new album coming out." They're like, shut up, we got to rob a bank. But Ludacris.
And drive real fast.
Yeah.
There's not much much else news.
I'm amazed there's any news this time.
Mega Man on OS 10, on iOS. Why is this a good idea? Why is this a good idea?
I love Mega Man X.
You're missing the big story this week. Mad Dog McCree on iOS.
I haven't bought that yet. I got to buy that today.
Mad Dog McCree's out.
GTA is out.
Yeah.
GTA 3.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to hear
that.
Mega Man X.
I want to know how that works with the virtual thumbsticks.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be
terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good. They're never going to work. Cliff Bleszinski tweeted something about those sticks never work.
It's very customizable.
Go ahead, Norm. Sorry.
Yeah, it's very customizable. Where you put your fingers on the screen is where the thumbsticks are. You can.
Oh, well, Geometry Wars was doing that years ago.
Tons of buttons. There's way too many buttons.
Right.
Are you talking about GTA or Mega Man?
I mean, GTA games were hard to control with a controller.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, the GTA 3 thing is unplayable. I can't imagine the precision you need to play a Mega Man game is going to work at all.
Yeah, it's a nice gimmick, but a lot of these games, again, the games that have been most, if you notice this, the games that have been most successful are the games that are written for the device. Yeah. Not these. Yeah, there's a nice gimmick to say, hey, Mega Man's now on iOS, but the reality is it's probably not really meant to be on that device.
Well, that's why something the like places, the Sony Xperia Play is more compelling, because I want to play those games, but I don't want to own another game console.
That's why I've said if they actually did a proper PlayStation phone that was like, you know, Vita technology, like a legitimate handheld, and it had all your phone features, that would be terrific.
Mega Man X would work great on the Xperia.
I just want a case that clips onto the bottom of the phone with a D-pad and four buttons and a couple of triggers.
There is one of those.
Do you really want that? They're...
No, but that's what I want to play Mega Man X on the console, on the phone.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I think that's a terrible idea. Like, Chrono Trigger works okay because it's not a fast game. And you don't have to be speedy with it.
I really like that D-pad on the – not the D-pad, but the thumbstick on the 3DS is actually one of my favorite features about it. Because it doesn't protrude out. It's just like a little disc that slides around, and it feels really good.
It's like a NES Max, right?
It's like what?
The NES Max. Do you remember that?
I do not remember the NES thing? Max. No, and I've been watching a lot of angry video game nerd videos lately, so I'm pretty up on a lot of my retro hardware, but I'm not familiar with that.
Have you the other place that it worked pretty well was on Sonic CD. I was pleasantly surprised by that, because that game basically you just press right and jump, and the fake D-pad worked okay on that. I didn't throw my controller in rage, which would have been really expensive since my controller is my iPad.
Yeah, the best game so far still, like, your Go Right, Angry Bird, not Angry Birds, Tiny Wings.
Yeah.
Tiny Wings, Jetpack Joyride.
Doodle Jump, I was just playing, what's the Jetpack one?
Jetpack Joyride.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. I just downloaded it. It was great. Enjoyed it.
And tons of opportunities to spend money, buy hats, get new jetpacks.
That's the model now, the microtransaction model.
Hey, Squiggs says that all the Squeenix games are on sale on iOS right now.
Oh, cool.
Don't know if Chrono Trigger is, but Tactics is and some other stuff.
All right.
These games, I think, are better on iPad because battery life.
And we just, I was a guest on a little essential iPhone apps video that you guys put together last week, and I think it's going up tomorrow, right?
Yeah, late tonight, tomorrow. Yep.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's some good. I thought there were some good choices in there. A lot of apps that begin with that begin with Insta.
Yeah.
If your app has the word Insta in it, you probably have a good app.
Yeah. It's no longer. It's like the app equivalent of getting rid of vowels and ending in R for a web service.
Yeah.
Insta. It's got to be
Insta Norm. Insta Will. Insta Gary. Insta West.
You see, Hipstamatic has a disposable camera app now that's, I guess, it's meant to mimic, like, you know, what Polaroid pictures look like or whatever. I'm not sure. It's like a social thing. It's like, you take pictures. It's like an old-fashioned disposable camera in that you've got like 28 pictures on a roll.
Oh, you have to take all 28.
You can't see them until you've shot out the whole roll.
That is rubbish.
Yes, stupid idea.
Yeah.
Hold on. So it's an in-game. You purchase the
film. The way Hipstamatic works, its business model is you buy the different filters.
You buy different lenses and
the way flashes. When you take a picture, you don't, it's not like Instagram or the camera app where you see the entire screen. It has to have some type of overlay, so you only see small portion of the screen.
But I think there's a social element to it where, like, you and I could share a role. So I could take 15 pictures. You could take 15 pictures. They're all going on the same role
of balls.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what they look like.
I'm like, hey, Norm, develop that role. And you're like, oh, I didn't need to see that. I've left something special for you on that role.
And then picture number 42. Yeah.
Yeah.
Will just walked away.
Yeah. It's like that. It's like that picture of your toothbrush up my ass from when I was at your house 2 months ago. Yes. Where did he? He didn't even announce that he was walking away, did he?
He just walked away.
Very rude.
Maybe he's going to dog wrangle.
Maybe some trees fell down.
All right, let's just keep going. What else is going on?
Hey, we saw Mission Impossible.
Yes, we did
last week.
That movie was
we didn't
kick
see it
ass.
Together.
No, we had to divide and conquer because we couldn't all go to the same showtime. So you and Wes went and saw it in the afternoon, and me and Will saw it after.
And
you.
I got sick after watching it because
did you?
I caught a cold.
Oh,
yeah,
that's unfortunate.
It was unfortunate. The movie was great. I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, you said there was.
I enjoyed the action sequences tremendously, especially in IMAX. I mean, the Burj Dubai sequence that they've made a big deal out of is tremendous, and the final action sequence is great.
They built that parking garage
structurally. It was very odd. Like, even though it seems to be building to that moment when that in that final action sequence, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that's the end of the movie. Like, I felt like I was still somehow in the middle of the film or something. It didn't feel like a climax.
Huh.
And I had major problems with the villain, as many people have commented. The villain doesn't feel developed or interesting at all.
Yeah.
He almost wasn't a character so much as he was just the threat of
just
nuclear
a cipher.
War.
Yeah,
he was just, there's nuclear war.
I get that, but I like it when the villain is interesting.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
When the villain has a point of view and, you know, has a personality and feels like a good foil to the hero.
Tom Cruise can still run really fast.
Every movie.
That's why Mission Impossible 3
is
still my favorite, because Philip Seymour Hoffman was such a great villain in that.
Yeah.
The running was also fantastic.
But the technology in the movie, I want to talk about the gadget stuff.
Well, hold on. Can I talk about 3 for a sec before we go to the technology?
Sure, you can talk about 3.
Because I watched 3 on the airplane right after we watched 4 the night.
Yes.
4. 3 is... If 3 weren't dumb, it would easily be the best movie in the series.
3 is the best movie in the series.
There's so much about 3 that is dumb. Like, all the technology stuff is dumb. It has the dopey masks. It's a stupid MacGuffin. It's just...
No, the MacGuffin's perfect, and it's very bold. They never show the heist intentionally.
Well, with 3, they very deliberately kind of just nailed
Okay, it's continuing recording.
Okay,
I don't know how much we lost, but that just happened.
So I thought it was again, they owned that decision that it didn't matter what it was. You never found out what it was, and that's fine. It's the briefcase in Pulp Fiction, and that's fine. But with Mission Impossible 4, it did matter what it was, and they did try to give the villain a point of view. They just never really went anywhere with it. You know, there was never any real interaction between the bad guy and the heroes. It was, and there's a couple of other plot, really gaping plot holes that bothered me. But as an assemblage of action sequences, it's the best one.
Yeah.
And probably the best action movie of the year, just as, you know, as an action vehicle.
I thought what they did with the wife stuff was really good.
I didn't care for that. Oh, felt tacked on.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was tacked on.
I didn't care for Jeremy Renner's whole backstory. It just felt like, yeah, we kind of have to give him a thing to hang his character on, but it just didn't seem that interesting.
Well, the whole thing felt like, oh, hey, we married off the wife in the last movie. Married him off in the last movie, so we have to resolve that somehow.
Well, of course. Right. They weren't going to make this movie. Last movie ended with him walking off in the sunset.
Let's bear in mind, the movie is not actually open in regular theaters until Friday, so be careful of spoilers.
Oh, man, we just dumped a bunch of spoilers out. You should go see it in IMAX if you can, though, because the Dubai stuff was unbelievable.
You should. And, you know, it's interesting. David Fincher was just railing against this recently, saying that IMAX doesn't interest him because he doesn't like that flip in fidelity when you go from watching the regular screen
to watching
the IMAX screen.
I notice it,
I notice it in a kind of a, whoa, this is going to be awesome. Yeah, we're into a good bit now.
Yeah.
Some people don't like that. You really notice it in the Dark Knight prologue.
Oh, not
because it opens in super letterbox mode, and then it goes full screen.
Right. But even in the Dark Knight...
Can we talk about the Bane stuff?
Well, Bane was very difficult to understand.
Who can forget that immortal line? He actually does it pretty good. That does sound a lot like Bane.
Fire rises.
I got that immediately. Is the ratio, the aspect ratio of IMAX, is it basically a square? Because that's kind of what it looks like.
It is basically a square.
Yeah.
A square or 4x3?
It's 4x3.
Okay.
But when IMAX is brought
it's
3x4,
it's the other way. It's taller than it is wide, right?
It's not taller than it is wide.
It kind of seems like it does when you're sitting there looking at it. But I remember looking at it going, what is the ratio here? Is it a square?
The bottom, because if you go to the front row, it goes all the way to the floor.
Yeah.
But the image never goes all the way to the floor.
Oh, okay.
And when you get IMAX movies like The Dark Knight on Blu-ray, I mean, it goes 16x9 for those IMAX scenes.
Right.
So it does really fill up your screen and it looks really, really good. But you can tell the difference.
Yeah.
It's done really poorly in like Transformers 2.
Because
they jump between the IMAX and the...
I thought Mission Impossible did it the best.
Yeah.
It didn't feel jarring. You notice the transition, but again, it just makes you feel like here comes something awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of like, and not only do you get extra scene, you can tell it's like a different lens. like the scenes are crisper. The scenes look better. There's more color definition. The low light stuff looks much better in IMAX. And
I noticed that actually in the first IMAX shot of the Dark Knight prologue, yeah, when they're standing on the runway, I was going, fuck me, that looks really, really sharp.
Yeah.
Like amazingly sharp.
It's like the depth is really nice.
I mean, what resolution is that being projected at?
It's film.
I know, but what I mean, if you had to, if there was like a digital equivalent of it, like what would it be?
I mean, you can scan old like 35 millimeter at up to like 6 or 8K. So
yeah. Because I mean, like when you're looking at a screen that's like whatever it is, 100 feet fucking wide, mm-hmm, and you're not seeing any image degradation as well, it's like, wow, that's high resolution. Yep. It looked fantastic.
Also, digital cameras. So we're talking about like, you know, image quality. The new Hobbit trailer, those red cameras that he's using, I think makes a big difference.
Looks good.
Yeah.
Very
definitely looks like
great color temperatures. You know, everything looks
it
looks
almost
very cool.
Too good. Like I can almost see the makeup on the dwarf faces.
Yeah, the thing that I'm gonna be looking forward to seeing is what the 48 frame per second stuff looks like.
Okay.
More so than 3D, which I don't care about.
Right. Right. So the gadgets in Mission Impossible.
Yeah. So I was going to say this is the tech part that makes it really.
I love this.
The thing that I love about this, and again, I don't want to spoil it too much, so I'll try and stay vague. But I think this is a decision that either the writers or the director or someone made very early on, which is to say we're not going to rely on the technology an awful lot. We're going to have some of it because all the audience expects to see the mask and the gadgets. But it's going to be what's interesting in this movie is that technology fails more often than not. And in fact, a lot of the situations that Tom Cruise and the guys are in the jeopardy is because the technology doesn't work when they need it to. And mm-hmm, I thought that was very cool.
Yep.
There was a lot of winking and nodding.
Like what?
Just with regards to the technology and the masks and all the kind of dopey stuff that's always been part of Mission Impossible from the TV show on. And you know, they were like, oh, it turns out this is really silly. And now we realize that we're going to call it out.
The problem with the masks is it makes everything way too easy. And it makes it too easy to hoodwink the audience. It makes it too easy to do the things that they need to do. Like, remember Darkman? He had the similar technology. You could make the mask, mm-hmm, look at anyone. They put an artificial limit on that. I don't know if you remember this, but the idea was that the mask could only hold its cohesion for 99 minutes. Mm. And so if he got stuck in a place, you know, he'd be like in a meeting with some mob boss pretending to be someone else. And the clock is like fine. The skin's starting to melt. And so, you know, there was some – because otherwise the mask gives you too much
is
of a –
Liam Neeson?
Yeah, in the original.
God, Sam Raimi, yeah.
And so with Mission Impossible, that was, oh, like, he's taking a mask. Oh, it's really someone else. And you're constantly thinking, oh, it's going to be a guy in a mask. So when they – you know, and they do use the masks a bit in Mission in the new one. But actually, like, one of the big set pieces is based on the fact that the mask machine doesn't work and they have to go without them.
Anybody who's used a printer know that fucking printers never work. So yeah. 3D printers.
They should have said it's out of ink.
Yeah.
But
there's also a lot of Apple products.
Yeah, well, Apple and BMW. I mean, BMW clearly is a major partner.
They're
in that
BMW ads.
They're running Mission Impossible themed.
Yes.
Man, that BMW concept is a beautiful vehicle.
You like it? Really?
I love it. I would drive the shit out of that.
Wow.
It's electric, I think. I think it's their electric concept.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, with the illuminated grill and the fucking neon lights up the side?
Yeah, that's the one with the laser
lights. It has the laser headlights,
laser
too, right?
Headlights.
Amazing.
Yeah. I if you went through and counted all the product placements in that movie, it would be well over 300.
Well, I
like
saw a lot of
I
saw a lot of
sunglasses on down.
A lot of Apple, a lot of BMW. Those are the two that I specifically remember being used over and over. Beyond that, yeah, I mean, anytime anyone can drink, and Bond movies obviously are the master of this. Anytime anyone can be drinking something or looking at a watch or driving a car or using any kind of product that is available for sale. Yeah, why not put something, mm-hmm, in there and the company will give
Keeps
you some money.
Makes
it
realistic. Thank you.
Like this delicious Ranger
Odyssey.
IPA that I'm drinking right now from the fine folks at New Belgium Brewing Company.
Oh, tasty.
Very good.
Oh. Even the fonts. Myriad, the Apple font was used, you know, because every spy movie, the font they use to tell you what city they're in is always a big deal.
Right.
Right? They use the Apple commercial font.
I was so disappointed. I didn't know this, but I was reading a story about like the worst fonts.
Yeah.
And one of them, I didn't realize that Papyrus that's used in Avatar, uh-huh, was just like a generic font. I
didn't know that.
I'd never seen it before.
What Papyrus is, it's like built in the Windows. It was like,
I know. And that's, and that's,
you,
and that's why it was amazing that I had that blind spot.
It says Africa.
Yeah, it says native wisdom
native
or something.
Is what it says,
the Jurassic Park one says safari. Cause
it says kind of like Native
too.
American kind of. Like, yeah, I had no idea that they were just generic
super
typefaces.
Super racist.
We should say, I have to do the next one in Comic Sans. That's what we want.
I've got to go in about 15, 20 minutes here, guys.
Oh,
but,
my goodness. Wow.
Hey, so let me ask you this.
It's been 2 hours.
Mission Impossible 4 had been the exact same movie frame for frame, except when it comes up like Prague, like it's in Comic Sans. How much would that take off the movie for you?
Oh, it would make it a Lonely Island, you know, like a parody SNL
joke. It would just ruin the entire movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Like 10 minutes later, Tom Cruise is like swinging off the Burj Dubai 130 floors up, and you're still like, that fucking tight face.
And he goes, India.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, with all the kind of the flashy effects that go on it, but what it's leaving behind is Comic Sans. That'd be so cool.
That's terrible.
My parents' basement.
Roll the... Terrible.
So I think that will do it for us.
Certainly does it for me.
Yeah. For this week, this is only a test.
Are you whiffing the outro?
No, I'm catching my breath.
Hey, Norm's done a yeoman's work here while you're fucking
drinking
on vacation and drinking beer and going to Beef Jerky outlets.
And I don't think we're gonna answer. We don't have questions this week. I apologize. We don't have a chance to listen to questions, screen them, and import them into our system, but we will keep that in our email. If you want to send us a question, it is podcast@tested.com. Make sure to listen to your questions with what do you listen to it with?
Oh,
with
my God.
Oh, here it comes. We knew it couldn't last. The House of Cards is coming down.
Wow. I shouldn't have even started. In my head, I'm like, should I even bother mentioning questions? I guess we'll do that at the end of every podcast.
I don't want to get any grief ever again. Look, there's so many buttons to press to make this thing happen.
Listen to your question before you send it in. Yes, make sure it's audible. That's all you need to know.
Yes, no WMAs.
Yep.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, listen to it for sure. And include a would you rather or include some piece of hometown trivia. We love those. So until next time, maybe until next year. For
Will Smith. I'll do a podcast next week. I'm just saying if it's
Will,
just
Will, you, might
know,
be do, you might be
yeah,
doing
Will
it on
might
your
be
own.
Podcast
the Will Smith
all
show.
Time. Maybe you can do a special Jaws thing.
Yeah. For Will Smith, Gary Widow, Wesley Funlin, Norman Chan for Test.com.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And stay tuned for
Happy Hanukkah for people and everything
crazy
else.
Crazy Kwanzaa. That was from Simpsons.
And
not
a crazy
racist.
Kwanzaa.
So racist. See you guys next year. Stay tuned for
Are
fake
we gonna
outtakes.
Do fake outtakes?
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested.
I love planets.
I love being on one.
Hey, I almost forgot. So for anyone that may have been concerned, I imagine most people didn't give a fuck, but for people that did, we did find out that the mold was not in fact causing...
Oh, didn't we talk about this last week?
We didn't. No,
we
were... We
found out subsequently.
Last week, the mold was still mold.
It's not... It's not
spores in our brain.
It's not growing toxic spores in our brain. It is just salt deposits, so we're told.
Effluvia. No, that's poop. It's efflorescence.
That doesn't sound good either. I like their first album.
You should go lick the wall and see if it, you know, fucks you up.
No, you should fucking lick the wall.
I'm 2,500 miles away. Hold on. Can we talk about that for a sec? I'm podcasting with you guys from 2,500 miles away.
You're video podcasting.
As I like to say, what an age we live in. And the great thing about Skype is you really sound like you're right there. It sounds so much better than a phone connection.
Well, the thing I realized is since Norm fucked up the GarageBand thing, there's no way that our clap sync thing is... He's going to have to just use this one, the Skype recording, so because there's no way to sync that up now.
I didn't fuck GarageBand. GarageBand just likes to fuck itself up.
So you're in the driver's seat, Chief.
I'll leave you guys to figure that out.
Stops there.
All right, so what?
I stepped in dog poop yesterday. That was pretty uncool.
Okay, this is going to be a good fake outtake, as I can tell. Did you do the thing where, like, when you stepped in it, it, like, you slid forward on it? Like, it left a big smear?
No.
Those are always the best ones.
How long ago the dog was
The least fun thing
it
to do
fresh.
Is when you're running your shoe.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got, like, a big boot tread. Yeah. Like, running it under the hot tap and, like, trying to dig the shit out of the grooves in the sole.
Did you do it in the kitchen sink?
What do you use?
The hose outside. I don't want shit in my sink.
I don't have a hose outside. I got to do everything indoors.
Ugh,
was
gross.
It your
I'm
own
not
dog
your house
shit,
anymore.
Will?
Huh?
Was it your own dog shit? Because if so, no one to
my
blame but yourself.
In San Francisco. This was some random dog by my sister-in-law's
That's
house.
That's rude. I hate that when that happens.
And I did the thing where I like put my foot down in it on the grass and I didn't notice it. And then I put my foot down on the concrete. It was like, wow, that's unusual. There's kind of a hump under my the arch of my foot. This isn't normally there.
Oh.
And then I was like, oh, man. That,
the thing is, we all know what that
bad.
Feels like. Yeah, everyone's done it one time.
Everyone's stepped in dog shit at some point in their life.
You know,
and I was wearing Pumas, so it's all up in the treads. And
they
I
really were Pumas.
It's bad.
Yeah, it does.
This always happens.
Happens all the time.
This never happened with the new computer, only the old one. Since we replaced it, it's
all right, it's running again.
We're going to need another beer in a minute.
Oh, my God. What time is it over there? Like 7 o'clock?
7:30. Oh, I had two beers at lunch. I'm on vacation.
Will is definitely a bit more punchy than usual. Have you noticed that?
Because no responsibilities. He's no.
Yeah, he's turned into the. He's turned into
I'm
internet.
A nervous wreck.
He's
turned like.
he's turned into internet guy. He's just like some dude on the on the internet who's going like you can't
get. What the fuck
is
wrong with you guys?
Sweatpants.
Yeah.
When this is done, I'm gonna take the iPhone in there and do a little Justin streaming of the dog.
The dogs. Is Chloe there or Chloe?
No,
not.
Chloe's closer to you guys than she is to me.
Oh wow!
What did you do with it? You put her in a doggy hotel or
dog napper?
Yeah,
she goes the same places she goes when she goes to daycare. They take them for long term.
Oh, okay.
So she's out roaming free. She's a free range corgi right now.
All right,
that's pretty. Good.
It's a good gig.
Hope you can tell the difference between the dogs.
Hey, should we talk about Path?
Oh yeah, we can talk about Path.
That should really have been what we've been testing.
Yeah.
So how did it suddenly happen that we all suddenly started using Path? Because we had all found it one way or another on our own.
No. I had signed on for Path 1 year ago.
I did as well.
Yeah,
I signed on a year and 6 months ago.
Yeah, I said 9 months ago I had signed on. Right. But I'd created an account, but I'd never used it.
I think I created an account to domain squat or to username squat.
Yeah.
But there are no usernames.
Well, I created it because my girlfriend gets in on the ground floor on a lot of these social networks, and she had a beta invite for me. I thought, I'll try it. But then I did it and just forgot about it. I wasn't looking to squat.
Path, if you don't know what it is, it used to be just a photo sharing. It's like an Instagram competitor.
Yeah, so they had now they're already calling it like Path 2 because it's like they reimagined it and did a whole new relaunch.
So about 2 weeks ago, they rebooted it with new app, and now it's basically the Facebook timeline. And it's a great excuse basically to rebuild Facebook without having to unfriend everyone.
It's like a combination of Facebook and Instagram, but the point being that you are encouraged to keep it just a close friend.
Yes, just a close friend.
Which I like because I'm looking at there's been a tremendous amount of Facebook sprawl, and I look at my Facebook and I don't know half the motherfuckers on here.
No, it's on iOS and on Android, and the apps are the same on both.
And the app, I haven't seen the Android app, but the iPhone app is exquisite. It's so gorgeous. Part of the reason why I'm using it is it's such a beautifully designed, joy to use app.
With the animations, and it's so easy to add things.
And that Instagram Hipstamatic model is really proliferating because they have that. So it has its own camera app built into it, and of course it lets you put on all kinds of Instagram type filters, and it lets you microtransact for additional filters inside the app as well. So they're already on that gravy train.
But I find that and auto if you let it detect your location, it'll auto post where you are at certain times of the day.
Yeah.
So your friends know, I'm by the
waterfront. It's real bad at that though.
I already put it on my front page on my phone for a trial period because I'm actually thinking because it'll let you decide which posts you want to also you can connect it to Twitter and Facebook, which ones you also want to go to Twitter and Facebook. Mm-hmm. Path can just be my default app. So this is a lot of stuff I just want to put on Path just for close friends.
Looks
but
great.
Hey, this one's more public. I'll put this on the other networks as well. Why not?
The thing it's I use it most do is let people know when I fall asleep and when I wake up.
Now, okay, that's the part I don't get. You can you can tell it when you're going to sleep and when you wake up
and
in the morning,
and
it will broadcast that information to your friends. Why does anybody care about that?
Because the phone is the last thing.
I like to know when Norm's working versus sleeping.
I guess.
The phone is the last thing I touch before I go to bed.
I guess it's one kind of way of saying, don't try to contact me or bother me or something. Like, I'm going to be off the grid.
And also, when I hit go to sleep, the Path app actually closes or shows a different, you can't actually browse.
It's really cool.
Right. You have to wake up again.
Exactly. And the first thing I do in the morning is grab my phone, check my email, and then I got to click wake up and then I check my email.
It's kind of soothing when you decide to go to bed and you hit the button and the moon rises into the sky. It's like a little electronic lullaby. So I don't know if it's going to succeed. I don't know if there's really room at this point in time for another social network to really just – I don't know how Python is really going to distinguish itself. But they've really put a lot of effort into the Chrome and the polish of it. And again, where I think it can distinguish itself is that you hear a lot of people these days, like myself and many others, complaining that Facebook has become too unwieldy, too many friends. This is why Facebook has taken a leaf out of Google Plus's book and added that kind of granular – level. So this one, I can define close friends, acquaintances, and I can decide public, you know, levels to which I want to make that each post available. Path, you don't have to manage it because you just say in the beginning, well, path is only for, I mean, you can only have 150 people maximum. And I'm not planning to have anything like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but originally when they first created that, they said, make this for your five closest friends.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So you really have to judge.
Yeah, which I love doing.
I love
judging my friends.
Yeah.
I remember one year I bought these really nice Christmas cards and I had a second backup box of Christmas cards that weren't quite so nice. And so I had to decide who got the really nice cards and who got the second tier
the right
cards.
Way to do that
and I realized I was ranking my friends.
You buy a pack of Christmas
the really
cards,
nice cards.
Cards, period, like from an artist. And there are only like three of the cards that you like and the rest are still good because they're from that artist.
Right.
But then those are the ones you get.
Right. But either way, you're forced to make this decision. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So I quit sending cards altogether.
I heard too much anxiety. That Adam Savage gave out for Christmas cards this year stone replicas of the Maltese Falcon.
Wow.
The Maltese Falcon.
I want one of those.
That would be there's one of those here in San Francisco.
Yes. Amazing coincidence, eh?
And this is so meta. Will is literally tagging pictures of us on Path as we speak.
Yeah. The other nice thing about it is because you have a very small volume of friends, I leave the notifications on because I actually care because it's all people I care about.
Right. Yeah. And so it's like starting over with a clean slate on Facebook. But there's no real website. It's all done on, you can, like Instagram, you can view pictures on the website, but that's all you can do. They want you to use it on your device. And I like it so far. I'm going to stick with it.
Passive Find My Friends, like as opposed to using the Find My Friends
app. Yeah, a little
app.
Bit.
Like yesterday you texted me, you don't want to get coffee because Pat said I might have been in an area close to you.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't mind putting geotagging my stuff now if it's only going to close friends. Yeah. Most of the time, like if it's a location, like I don't necessarily want to put a pin where my house is, you know, that goes out to a million people. But if it's just close friends, then it's all good.
And I'm glad there's none of this badge stuff involved for achievements.
Oh God, no! None of that Foursquare bullshit.
There's a whole other mini game about naming locations around, you know, giving locations that aren't in their database clever names, like my house,
right?
Which is called Home.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, how long did it take you to come up with that one?
Well, you know, I looked at synonyms for home, and I chose home because there weren't really.
I thought I was being very clever calling my home location Cloud City because I live up on the top of a high hill in San Francisco where it's very cloudy all the time. And it turns out somebody already had done it. Someone had the same idea, so I just selected Cloud City from the list of available locations.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I thought Billy D was there.
No, I'm Billy D. I am the Billy D of my Cloud City.
I think you're Lobot.
Would you care to join me for a little refreshment? Everyone's invited, of course.
What are you guys doing for the holidays?
Fuck all. Plants. Just the way I like it. I'm going to go. So for Christmas Day, I'm just going to sit around, open presents with my girlfriend, eat some turkey.
You bought each other, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, I'm like, not like presents you receive from other people and you're waiting for Christmas Day to open it.
No. Well, I mean,
stash of presents. I mean, accumulate.
No, it's usually just mutual gift giving, and there's a couple of extra things that dribble in, but you know, not much. And then I'm excited about a couple of events. The following week of Christmas week. One is on the 27th. I'm going to go over to my friend Mike Micah's house. Mike, as some people who follow Whisker Media may know, he was a former game journalist who became a game developer, and his distinction is that he's a genuine expert in like retro. Old-fashioned gaming, and he has an incredible, incredible collection of old games and game systems. Just an amazing, amazing library of stuff. And he has, I don't know how many other people would remember this, but he has a working copy of the original electronic board game Dark Tower, which I'm very excited from the
80s. I have that game. It's awesome.
I'm very excited about that. I'm going to go over there Christmas week and play it. And then we're going to be building some Lego as well, right, at some point?
Yeah,
we're going to have a couple of people over to build. We've got a bunch of Legos that we never got around to building. We've got a big Lego Death Star. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I was looking at that Super Star Destroyer.
Do you really want it?
Leah just turbo burned you in chat, dude.
I do. What?
Leah just said you're dumb that she's the one who named it Cloud City.
Oh.
Well, no. It's someone else did it, right? So technically I'm correct.
Fair enough. I don't think I would. Never mind.
That actually means, though, that I get it. That she's done me a favor. I thought someone else had thought of it independently. Now I realize that she got it from me.
Oh, so you're saying she stole your idea.
Yeah. So
you were more original than you thought.
So that's actually, hold on. Oh, now I'm getting texts from her. She's giving me shit on text as well. Never ends. So we have a Lego Death Star to build. Very excited about that. Lego Star Destroyer was $400. It's a bit mad.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
You bought one of those?
No, I didn't buy it. I like the architecture range. I built a Lego White House, and I really like some of those Frank Lloyd Wright buildings that they have in the original.
Not too stressful.
Some are deceptively difficult, really? Like the Roby House, which is the big many pieces.
Wow.
There are some that are very simple, like the Seattle Space Needle and the Burj Dubai. Some of those and Rockefeller Center are very simple. That's what I would recommend if somebody wanted to get into Lego architecture. I would say do the White House. It's a good, you know, it's not so simple that it's not fun, but it's not crazy. And then the high end stuff is stuff like the Frank Lloyd Wright, like Falling Water and Roby House and some of those plays.
It's also the kind of thing where if you get all from the same line, it's like they all look nice next to each other on a shelf.
Yeah, they're great. I love them. It's fun to make famous buildings. It's not technically GarageBand is burping at you again.
Oh, fuck you.
God damn it. Really?
Yeah, I don't know how long ago that started.
Nope, I'm recording.
It's going again. So, yeah, the Lego architecture line is great. My favorite one, actually, in that whole setup, there's two that I would like. One is the space shuttle, and the other one is – it's not in the architecture line, but it should be. It's a beautiful piece of a tower bridge in London, really, with a bridge, you know, raises and lowers and everything. Really amazing.
Oh, we saw that. So Norm and I were thinking about having a contest.
Oh, God.
Should we tell them?
Do I want to hear about what this is?
Oh, no. We don't want. No, don't give this away. No, because –
Okay.
This. Yeah. Yeah. We need an endurance run.
We thought the Chrono Trigger thing could be it.
But we don't want to play video games.
Weren't we going to do the thing where we went without internet? That we've been talking about that for the longest time.
No, that's a challenge. That's like a weekend thing. We're talking about like an ongoing video series that would be the equivalent of Giant Bomb's endurance run. What would it be?
Okay.
We'll talk about it up.
All right.
Are you talking about it offline?
New Year's Eve? What are you doing New Year's Eve?
Don't ask me that. I hate that question. That is the number one question I hate in this time of year.
It doesn't bother me anymore because I checked out of the whole New Year's Eve nonsense many years ago. I'm usually in bed.
Congratulations.
I'm usually asleep before midnight
on
New Year's Eve.
That's awesome.
I like to watch Dick Clark.
I'm glad to hear you, though, as a representative of the younger generation getting on this train. I thought
so
this was just for
old beef with New Year's Eve, exactly?
It's amateur hour, man.
It's that there's an expectation that you gotta do something crazy awesome.
And also
go out and dress up and go to a party. And my friend's like, you want to go to those things called Booty with an IE? I'm like, it's $45 a ticket with fees.
And here's the problem. Because there is such a high expectation, everyone has the same idea that they're gonna have a great night on the same night. It's actually the most difficult night of the year to have a good time.
Absolutely, yes.
You can't get a drink. It's six deep at the bar. Yep. You can't get a cab, and the cabs are going to fucking gouge you when you can get a cab. Yep. Everyone's fucking falling over drunk, acting like a dickhead. It's not fun.
Yeah.
The only way you can have a nice night on New Year's Eve that involves actually like going out and socializing is if someone nearby is having a house party that's just a few friends, have a nice evening.
Which is what I did that last year.
But going out to bars and clubs and stuff on New Year's Eve, you got to be fucking joking.
People get these elaborate plans. We're going to start, you know, celebrating New Year's on when people in London are having it, so we can drink earlier in the night.
Oh, fuck those people.
Then go roll in and do bar hopping and crazy. And then people are like, oh, this friend's group is going to do this stuff. I'm like, I don't want to do any
of that. So what are you
going to
do? You're just going to stay in?
I don't know. The trick to get around all that is to go on vacation. It's to go on a trip. If you go to – let's go to Costa Rica on New Year's Eve. If you
but it's New Year's Eve everywhere.
Go to Costa Rica.
Well, then you have less obligation to be with certain friends groups and you can you completely carefree.
I was thinking about having board game night on New Year's. You guys want to come down?
My best New Year's ever was just like a couple years ago and I had – like when I was still in college and I had friends, you know, come home from out of state in school and we just were hanging out like playing board games and stuff and then it was like 1 a.m. We're like, oh – hey, it's New Year's. That was fun.
Yeah, I'm usually in bed. I mean, most nights these days, I usually don't stay up that late. But I it's like, you know, you watch the ball drop thing. The least spectacular spectacle in entertainment is watching that fucking ball drop. And you go, oh, well, that's it. Should we go to bed? It's 12:02.
And like, hey, the
Dick
recorded
Clark
some
show
three
has just
days
become
ago in LA.
Sad. Mm-hmm. So, really. The other entertainment that's available on New Year's Eve is just shit. It's just terrible. Drunken revelers. Yeah, I just like being indoors.
It's like St. Patrick's Day. You don't go out on St. Patrick's Day either.
And Halloween.
I like Halloween.
St.
Patrick's Day, you're right, is the worst because that is the part, because that is like, that's not, it's not an excuse to drink. It is about drinking. So yeah. Everyone is at their absolute worst.
Yeah, it's the pits, man.
Yeah. Ireland's great cultural gift to the world.
I like corned beef and cabbage, though. I'm down with that.
Corned beef.
That's actually unfair for me to say. Ireland, of course, has made many fantastic cultural gifts. And
Guinness.
The funny thing is they make a bigger deal about St. Patrick's Day here in the U.S. than they do in Ireland.
I'm sure. Yeah. He's got to do everything bigger in the U.S.
Wasn't even Irish. St. Patrick.
Well.
Let's not go down this road.
Yeah.
All right. Well, is that it?
I was enjoying the belly aching about New Year's Eve. I'm glad to have found a kindred spirit in someone still in his 20s. Maybe this is going to catch on.
I think we need to watch a few more alternative Christmas movies before the end of the month.
I've still got to watch all my staples. I haven't watched Die Hard yet. I haven't watched Lethal Weapon. I haven't watched Christmas Vacation.
Sure. We
got to watch
all three. Weapon. Die Hard is on the list.
Gremlins.
To be watched. Gremlins.
Christmas Vacation has to be on your list.
What were the things you couldn't do with the gremlins? You couldn't feed them after midnight.
Don't get them wet. Don't feed them after midnight.
And no bright light.
And no bright light.
Yeah.
What does bright light do?
They just don't like it.
They melt.
But don't get them wet. Don't get them wet. They multiply. Bowl. It was the not feeding them after midnight, which actually turns them into gremlins. Again, that's kind of the most bogus rule because like midnight where? Like exactly. Really?
It's like where the moon is relative to the gremlin, I guess.
Yeah, but you know, good
if
fun.
They can't take bright light. Can they not go outside during the day?
They cannot.
No, they don't.
That was a whole plot of Gremlins 2.
I never saw Gremlins 2.
Oh, you're missing out. Phoebe Cates.
I love Phoebe Cates.
Yeah,
she's like 50 now.
Kevin Kline.
There's a lot of great TV Christmas specials. I mean, I got to watch my Festivus episode. Maybe I'll do that tonight.
Yeah, it's for the rest of us.
It is. I've got a great Festivus T-shirt. Maybe I'll wear that tonight.
Mm. We had airing of grievances the other day.
The airing of grievances. See, I air my grievances all year round, so I don't really feel like I need to get it done. That's for families that kind of hold it in all year round, and then they want to let it all out in one spectacular cavalcade.
I'm going to go see my sister and brother-in-law for the first time in a year, and the dogs. And I'll live stream the dogs for a minute or two.
Fantastic. So. And they say there's no good entertainment on it anymore.
Yeah.
This is what the internet was created for.
Absolutely. Videos of dogs and cats.
Just say, you know, tweet Will Smith.
Did you see the video of like the lizard trying to eat the ants off the iPad?
They
were tricking it. Oh, well. Apparently someone else tried it with a frog and the frog got annoyed and fucked up the iPad.
So wait, where are the ants on the iPad?
So it's like some app that has like little ants like marching down the screen and the lizard like an iguana or something is trying to like lick the ants off the screen. When his tongue hits them, they disappear because it's touch sensitive.
Oh.
But he can't figure out why he's not tasting any ant and he looks kind of sad. And like people are laughing, that's not sad. You're teasing that poor iguana. So there's now a comeback video where someone else tried to do it with like a massive bullfrog or whatever.
Oh, no.
And I haven't seen the video, but apparently the frog gets really frustrated and like fucking goes rage on the iPad.
I couldn't imagine a frog going rage on anything, let alone a 2-pound iPad.
Yeah, well, it's a big frog.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Or maybe he might knock it on the floor and smash it or something. I don't know. Yeah, the frog hulks out.
Don't fuck with frogs.
Yeah, he's already green.
Honey badger, don't give a shit.
Yeah. All right, let's get out of here.
All right.
Later on, guys. Have a good Christmas.
All right.
All right, thanks, Will.
See y'all later.
See you later, guys.
Thanks, guys, for watching the stream.
I think I may go check out the Atari 2600 marathon that's happening over it.
Norm,
your meter. Kill the stream, then kill GarageBand.
What's that?
Kill the stream, then
bye.
Kill
bye, guys. Bye. Wave bye, Will.
Bye.
You can wave bye to the camera.
Bye, camera. Do you need me to help you make this into a podcast, or you get somebody there to do it?
I'm going to stop GarageBand. Hold on.